Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Sandy Kometke, CWA president of Local 13500, going to be here talking about day six of the Verizon strike. What's going on the picket line? What's going on the bargaining table? Hopefully these folks get back to work soon. But you know, this, as I've been saying all week, this strike right here, this is the one I do believe is that first piece in defending the working class of this country. If these folks go down, I believe we all go with them. If you allow a bargaining unit of this size to go down, if you allow the wages of these workers to go down and the benefits to plummet down as well, we're all going to follow. Because understand, they define the working class as 62% of the population in this country is solidly working class. They punch a clock, they collect a paycheck. In a week, that paycheck is gone. Most people live paycheck to paycheck to paycheck. You got the majority of people in this country who fall into that category. If we see this group of us fall, we're all going to fall with them. Because as they lose benefits, we lose benefits. So, you know, I saw a number of people out on the streets today beeping the horns, waving, you know, talking, chanting with the striking Verizon workers, and talking to a couple of the people. I think they get it. Look, I want to see them succeed because if we see wages rising, we all rise together. So it'll be interesting talking to Sandy Kometke about that. Also in the second hour, Dr. Richard Levins, professor from the University of Minnesota's Department of Applied Economics. He's going to be here. He's also the author of two really good books, Middle Class Union Made and Getting America Back to Work. We're going to talk about the super committee. We're going to talk about jobs. How do you get jobs back? How do we create an economy that works for people like you and me and people like Sandy Kometke and all the folks at Verizon? And in the second hour, also Zenny Abraham, a writer at the San Francisco Chronicle. He's going to be here talking about the, I don't know if you saw this, but the transit system out there. They evidently asked one of the mobile providers to cut service so that people couldn't talk on their cell phones. Because, you know, people were really ticked off that there was a police shooting and there was a planned protest, so they cut off communication services. And the whole line of questioning goes with that, so it'll be interesting, to talk to Zenny Abraham about that. Also, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Yesterday, if you listened to the program, and if you missed any part of it, thericksmithshow.com, great place to go pick up our podcast. Also, if you've got a smartphone, you can download the Stitcher app and take your class war on the go. But Mitt Romney really grabbed me. This whole idea that corporations are people, really kind of just grates on my nerve, because we've been hearing people saying, well, you know, money's votes, and you know, corporations should have free speech, and I'm saying no. A corporation is a legal contract. It's this construct of people who've put money together to create this entity that never dies, that doesn't get sick, that you can't throw in jail. But here's the thing. The entire right wing of this country is now defending him. Earlier today, Caribou Barbie, the quitter governor from Alaska, she chimed in. I guess she hopped back on her luxurious motor coach to kick off another magical mystery bus tour, this time at the Iowa State Fairgrounds. And she was asked, you know, hey, what do you think? And when she got out of her luxury Where's Sarah bus, which I guess is tracing the footprints of Romney yesterday, she said some dumb stuff. And she was asked, what do you think? And she agreed with Romney. Corporations are people. And, you know, I gotta wonder about that. You know, so I guess I've really kind of figured this out. I'm no longer going to say corporate America, because corporations aren't American anymore. These big multinationals, they have about as much interest in this country as the Iranians or the Chinese or the Afghanis or any of the people from out. They have about the same amount of interest. So I'm no longer going to call GE part of corporate America, or Walmart, or any of these big multinationals. They're no longer corporate America. They're the multinationals, they're the transnationals, whatever. But no more America with that, because they don't care about this country. They care about themselves. And what I found interesting also yesterday, Rand Paul chimed in on the question of our corporations people, and he said, well, we're all corporations, so we're no longer people. We're corporations, which is really kind of, you know, I guess interesting. Does that mean I'm not going to die? Does that mean I could take out a $250 million loan for 100 years? Does it mean when I do something wrong, I just negotiate a fine instead of going to jail? When I kill somebody, does it mean that, well, gee, we'll have to negotiate on that? And the reality is no, we're not corporations, and corporations are not people. And again, you know, for my folks who are hell-bent on constitutional amendments, I'd like to see one that defines a human being as a person. No more corporate people. I want human people. Flesh and blood, bones. When they're struck by lightning, they die. Corporations, they just change a fuse. Interesting poll came out. Only 34% of the people in this country, 34%, can get their hands on $1,000. I mean, stop and think about how amazing that is. When you stop and think about the redistribution of wealth in this country from people who work for a living to the upper crust, you look at 34%. They'd go to their savings account to get $1,000. The rest of the people, they'd have to borrow or take out a loan or go to a family member or something along that lines. But 34%. And according to Bankrate, the people who did the polling, they said that only 24% of the nation has 6 months of emergency savings that they can access. And if they lose a job or if they get sick or something happens. To me, that's amazing. And you look at the fact, the other side of this, who's sitting on all the money? The corporate people. And, you know, I listened to this whole GOP debate last night. I got to sit and watch it today. And all they kept talking about was how we're going to cut spending, how we're going to cut. And it's all of this austerity, all these policies that I do believe are going to make our economy so much worse off, so much weaker. The more and I love this mentality that we're not going to tax people. We're not going to tax these rich people. We're not going to tax these millionaires and billionaires because we don't want to pull money out of the economy. But we're going to slash federal spending and pull billions and billions of dollars out of the economy. And somehow that's going to create jobs. I'm kind of confused on that one. And I wish someone could possibly, you know, maybe just possibly explain this to me, because I'm not getting it. I'm just not getting it. and handing out trillions more, handing it out to the upper crust, it's not doing it. You know, think about it this way. We've done it both ways. We've done it their way, and we've done it my way. Their way, hand all the money you can to the very wealthy, create a wealth class of elites, a billionaire class, and we've got some 1,500 official certified USDA Forbes magazine certified billionaires. That's our labor. We've done that. So congratulations with 62% of the working class. Your labor has created a billionaire class again. It's the second time we've done it. And the first time we went to a Great Depression. And then we had something that I like Paul Krugman's frame on it. It was called the Great Compression, where we had tax rates and we had an idea where, you know what, we're all going to lead semi-equal lives. We're going to have some equality. And we had tax rates that, you know, punished, you know, for the most part, punished people who were taking billions of dollars and gave it to people who at the bottom to help them, you know, get along and spend a little bit more money so everyone did better. And here we are. Robber Baron 2. We've seen the movie. We saw Robber Baron 1, saw how that ended. Now we're back at it again. We've created the wealth class again. So what we need to be doing is figuring out how do we go and create a middle class again. They did it again. Now we've got to figure out how to go back and do the things that our grandparents and our great-grandparents did after World War II. And you look at the corporate people, which is, you know, one of these things that just kind of gets me. The Wall Street Journal pointed out today that non-financial companies, these aren't the Wall Street people. Wall Street's sitting on piles of cash, too. But these are the non-financial companies in the Standard & Poor 500 stock index. They're holding $1.12 trillion in cash. And they're saying that that's a 59% increase from the third quarter of 2008. So a 59% increase. So now, again, help me here because I may need it. Tell me again why we need to give them the wealth class and corporations more. Tell me again because we've already given them. They're sitting on piles of it. Piles of it. Up almost 60% over 2008, and they're still not hiring. And these numbers really, honestly and truthfully, fly in the face of the conservative argument for corporations to get more handouts, to get more deregulation. Because, you know, they keep telling us that, right? We need to give them more subsidies, more handouts, more tax breaks, lower tax rates, more deregulations. And then, only then, will they start hiring. And, you know, I go back to House Majority Leader Eric Cantor, and you'll remember it. I talked about it a couple of times. Who basically made my argument for me when he was asked about the FAA taxes that we, the people, were no longer getting in the airline industry, just absorbed and put into their pockets. And Cantor claimed, well, that's what business does. And he's right. That's sometimes what they do. They rip people off. And I gotta ask you, is that what business does in the conservative world? And the answer is absolutely yes. So for me, when I look at this, I ask the question again. How did we get roped into this debt and deficit dog and pony sideshow when the real problem was jobs? And now you've got some people saying, well, you know, we need to, with this debt, this super Congress, we need to start talking about jobs. And I agree. We talk about jobs everywhere. But if you look at Gingrich last night in the debate, I agree with him. And it's, trust me, I don't like agreeing with Newt Gingrich. But he's right. The super 12, this is a scam. It's dumb. It needs to be done away with. Because after all, we've got 535 people we pay to do that job. You're telling me now we're only going to need 12? Are we going to do what corporate America would do and downsize? So while we're not talking about jobs, we see our economy downgraded. We see our country downgraded. And it's just mind-blowing. And last night to hear Michelle Bachmann say that the downgrade proved her right is just plain insane. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Sandy Kometke, CWA Local 13500. She's the president there. Right back after this.
Can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. CWA President Larry Cohen says 45,000 striking CWA and IBEW workers at Verizon are fighting for the middle class against $1 billion in concessions demanded by the highly profitable company. Cohen says Verizon's justification that its wired business is in decline is no excuse for the effort to squeeze money from the workers.
These are the workers that build the backbone of the entire company, wireless and wireline. They've had union busting at Verizon Wireless for 15 years, fired thousands of workers, closed centers to avoid unionization on the wireless side. So that rings hollow.
The American Dream movement is busy this summer telling Congress what Americans really want when it comes to government spending and the economy. There's a contract for the American Dream that lays out a progressive alternative to austerity policies. Natalie Foster, CEO and co-founder of Rebuild the Dream, says the American Dream movement has a clear message for Congress.
For months, the debate in Washington's been focused on cutting programs that people depend on, rather than creating jobs and making millionaires pay their fair share. We have a very simple message for Washington, and that is that America is not broke. Americans don't want Congress to gut vital programs like Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, but Americans do want jobs, and they want an economy that builds a strong middle class and a future that they can believe in.
Dozens of organizations, including labor unions, the Sierra Club, MoveOn.org, and many others, are partners in the American Dream movement. Foster says 130,000 people wrote the contract for the American Dream online, submitting 20,000 ideas.
And then offline, in every congressional district in the country, there were House meetings that happened where people came together and deliberated the things that had sort of risen to the top online. And from that came the contract for the American Dream, a progressive economic vision for this country.
The democracy addicts are among those reminding Wisconsin Republicans that we're still here. Jesse Russell reports.
The Democracy Addicts are a new organization in Wisconsin that was born out of the protests in February. Sharing their mutual frustration on Twitter, they decided to meet in person over beer. Since then, the movement has expanded to six cities and includes more than 200 everyday citizens, many of whom have never been politically involved before. Last month, the Democracy Addicts started the We're Still Here project, intended to remind Republicans in the Capitol that they aren't going away and to let others know they don't need to stop fighting. You can view the videos at the Democracy Addicts website, DEMAA.org. The following is a snippet from the video by founding member Jenny Dye.
We're still going to keep fighting for the values that we believe in, for what we believe Wisconsin deserves, and for what we want for ourselves and our neighbors. 150 days or so later, we're still here. We're still fighting, and we're asking you to join us.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Organizing America, 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, the podcast is there at the website. Also, if you've got a smartphone, you can download the Stitcher app and take your class war on the go. Well, today is day six of the CWA strike against Verizon. And today I was out with some of the people walking the picket line. Lots of good cheer from the folks around, beeping, waving. Nobody that I saw in the time that I was out there had any adverse things to say. I'm saying this is going well. I think the workers, solid behind this. That's why I've asked Sandy Kometke, she's the president of CWA 13500, to come talk to us about what's going on there. Sandy, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, how are you this evening?
I'm good. I guess the question is, how are you doing this evening?
We're holding up fine. Our members are solid.
So tell me, who do you represent at 13500?
Well, I'm a statewide local, and my membership with Verizon are the customer service representatives. Sales, service, and billing. We're the voice of the company. We're the first people you talk to.
So you're really the people that I want to protect the most, because I really don't want to talk to anybody in India or Pakistan or who knows where half the time.
Well, and that is becoming a problem. Roughly, we did some analysis for this bargaining, and close to 36% of our calls now, they're contracting out. So Pennsylvania customers that are calling in, 36% of them are going either to other states and or out of the country.
Now, to me, that seems like something that you should be asking for at the bargaining table, saying, look, we want to bring this work back. And I think, I got to be honest with you, I think the American people would be 100% behind you because, you know, there's nothing more that I hate more than picking up the phone and talking to somebody I can't understand.
Well, I agree with you wholeheartedly, and our folks do a wonderful job. As a matter of fact, it's funny you say that. That is our number one demand at this contract bargaining. I am probably the most senior representative on the bargaining committee. I had been with Verizon and hired back in the 1960s. So a lot of what they're trying to take away, we did and we built during these last 40 years.
So basically trying to steal back. I guess you're like every other company in this country right now, because every time I open the Wall Street Journal, every time I look at the different news reports, I'm seeing corporations stealing back wages, stealing back benefits. In fact, the guy, the analyst for J.P. Morgan Chase, said that, you know, American corporations are more profitable than they've been since the 1960s, and the reason he concluded is that they've been stealing wages and benefits back.
Absolutely. This company is a $100 billion company, and we stopped at $1 billion is what they're asking for in concessions from the backs of the men and women who built this company. For the men and women who not only built this company, that made them so much money that they were able to invest and buy wireless.
You know, it's interesting that you bring that point up, that it's the men and women who built the company, because I've been seeing some bogus, and I think they're bogus reports, of some vandalism, some wires being cut, and because I can't imagine that the people would be doing this, the folks who built this company would be doing this, and the reason I think that is because, you know, Verizon, I guess, called in the FBI, and I'm going, well, why wouldn't you use the local cops?
Well, it sounded a little strange to us, too, and we do not condone any type of violence. And I'm going to tell you something. You know, I've been on the picket line with my members, and I've never seen anything like that.
I've been on the picket line with your members, and I haven't seen anything like that. But for me, what it comes down to is this media campaign, this messaging war that this kind of stuff turns into, because I've walked the picket line in years past, and the company has always tried to demonize us as somehow doing something that's not right to get the public on their side. I think the American public is behind you because they're seeing exactly what you laid out. The company wants to steal $1 billion back from the workers, and that's really what it's about.
It absolutely is. And even the CEO of Verizon is hitting our picket lines, I understand, talking to my members and trying to find out, you know, what their issues are and why they're upset.
Well, they're upset because they're stealing their wages.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. I think my members, especially in Pittsburgh and in the central part of the state, gave them a what for. And my customer service reps, there is a demand on the table. The company wants 30% of their payback, and what they said was they can earn the 30% back. They just want them to work harder.
Well, of course, yeah, you know, that's been the whole argument all along. We have this grand meritocracy, and the harder you work, the more you're going to get paid. But the reality is, and the numbers bear this out, we broke away from wages and productivity back during the Reagan years. Up until then, as productivity rose, wages rose. The Reagan years took us to productivity skyrocketing and wages flattening off and actually declining. And I use a quote from Verizon spokesman, and I've been using this all week, a guy named Rich Young. I'm sure you know who he is.
Yes.
He said in the newspaper that they're simply looking to get their benefits in line with the rest of their workers. And my question then becomes, what does that mean? Does that mean no benefits? Does that mean no health care, no pension? What does that mean?
Well, what this means to my, as I said, to my members is $1 billion in concessions. They want to strip away things in years past. And as I said, I've been around since the 1960s. So there were a lot of years that we took very low percentages of wage increases in order to have decent benefits. So what they want to do, they want our retirees and our active members, in some cases, to pay thousands of dollars a year now for medical benefits.
Yeah, I had read something that they wanted like $20,000 in concessions from each worker.
Yes, it's roughly about right. That's roughly the right number you're talking about.
That just seems inordinately high.
Well, it is high, and it is high. I mean, it's drastic. It is there. I'll tell you what, the company came to the bargaining table with more demands than the union. They came with close to 100 demands, all givebacks.
And how many of them have you gotten through? Because the last person I talked to said, you know, they came with 100 demands, and they were willing to concede on none of them.
Well, they withdrew one demand.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
It's unbelievable to me. When we talk about trying to bargain, that is a big issue for us. I'm used to bargaining. You're used to give and take. Let's talk about this. This is just nothing more than they want, and they want it back. And they want all of it back.
Then they want it now. And I look at their CEO, who I'm basically calling a petty dictator, because that's how I see this. Over the last 4 years, I'm told he's taken somewhere in the neighborhood of $81 million in total compensation.
Absolutely.
And not only that, he and his wife, not just him, but him and his wife, they have health care from now until the day they die, no matter what happens to the company, no matter what happens to him in his employment.
And that is also my understanding. And the amount of money that he makes in one day, my members make in 1 year.
And those are the people, and this is, you know, this is one of those things that gets me, is those are the people who actually are paying his salary, yet they have no input into his salary, yet he has total input into theirs.
Absolutely. And as I said, this is really unbelievable that they would come for this, and then not only wanting the concession on health care and everything else that we have. I mean, there's just so many things here to even go over and to even name, but to not only want that, but also then to want to put my folks and take 30% of their pay, put them on commission, and then say, well, you'll work harder to make up that 30%. When I was hired into this company, customer service was what we were supposed to give. We were told that we were the be-all, end-all. We were one of the best companies around for customer service. And I still believe my members want to do a good job.
Absolutely.
And my fear is I don't want to put objectives that they have to obtain in order to receive the same amount of money that they're making today, to put that at risk in order to achieve your goals, your sales goals, rather than give that good customer service.
Yeah, I mean,
because my members do care about the public. My members do care.
And I'm glad they do, but you don't want to have people who are looking to cut corners, looking to, you know, to do some things that may not be on the up and up, and really tick off a customer. So I appreciate that. Let me ask you this. One of the frames that I've been hearing, and maybe you can shed some light on, I think you said a little bit earlier about moving to the Fios. We keep hearing this frame that, well, this is an old industry. It's the old telephone. People are going away from the old telephone. This is new technology, and we need to be more flexible. I keep hearing that, the whole flexible thing, which is ridiculous. What's your take on that?
Well, let me just tell you, we always get the profit reports, from Verizon, and we see what their, profit margins are. Even they have said their wireline business has been improving for the past 5 quarters. Our members also build and service Fios, which continues to grow. I think revenues are up, I believe it was in 20-21%. Really, wireline is more than just voice service for consumers. You know, it services the small to large business customers. It's Fios, and it's the network that actually makes wireless possible.
Yeah,
so you know, I understand what they're trying to do, and maybe they're not making quite as much money on the wireline as they have as they did years ago when there was no competition, but it's still a profitable business.
Yeah, and it shows in their numbers. I mean, and it shows in the fact that the top five executives, as I look through some of the numbers over the past 4 years, have taken close to $260 million.
Right. Yes, that's
correct. So if there's no money there, if it's an old and dying business, I'm sorry, I don't see $260 million going to the top five. I don't see that as feasible.
Well, I believe what's happening here is what's happening in Wisconsin. I think they see an opportunity to grab some more money and to make some more money. And I think they're trying to ride on that wave, thinking that middle-class America won't notice what's going on. And, you know, we have made a conscious decision here. This isn't right. We need to stand up and fight. We're not only fighting for our brothers and sisters at Verizon, but we're fighting for our brothers and sisters. And what we're saying is we need to stop this now. We need to stop. They're trying to eradicate almost the middle class.
Absolutely.
What's going on? So you know, it's a fight that we should all partake in.
You know, you mentioned there a second ago that the middle class in America hasn't really noticed. I agree. And the reason that I bring this up is because without a union, without CWA representing those Verizon workers, every one of these 100 points, every one of the concessions, every one of the cuts, every one of the thefts of wages and benefits, every one of those things would have been imposed without anyone having a say.
Right. You're absolutely right.
And this is the reason I keep telling people, whether, you know, whatever your ideological stance is, being part of a labor union, being part of a collective bargaining agreement is probably the dollar for dollar the best investment you'll ever make.
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Because of this situation right here, $20,000 a year that this company wants to steal back from its workers, and you guys are standing and fighting, and we will be here supporting you every step of the way, and we're going to be out on the picket line supporting the folks walking the picket line, and I appreciate the work you do. Keep it up, and, you know, one day more.
I said we will be here one day longer.
All right, Sandy Kometke, I appreciate the time. We look forward to having you back again real soon to give us some updates, and then when this is won, to come back as well.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate your having me on the show.
All righty, Sandy Kometke, CWA 13500 president. Man, good stuff. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
The Rick Smith Show.
GOP land is all a Twitter now that Texas Governor Rick Perry has announced that he's ready to ascend to the White House. His candidacy was actually launched the week before at a prayer-a-palooza he held in Houston, where he consecrated himself as the Christian candidate. Only about 30,000 evangelicals attended Perry's public prayer spectacle in a cavernous football stadium, but the presidential wannabe got saturation coverage by the media, which has gone gaga over yet another small-minded right-wing Texas governor. If the media had any real journalistic curiosity about what kind of national, quote, leader this guy would be, they could have slipped away on that same day to the city's convention center. There, a much larger crowd of 100,000 Houstonians had gathered in bleak testimony to Perry's gubernatorial leadership. They were some of Houston's many low-income children and parents struggling to make ends meet in Perry's hard-scrabble Texas economy. These needy families had come to a citywide back-to-school event where backpacks, school supplies, uniforms, haircut vouchers, immunizations, and bags of food were being provided by the school district. Officials had expected 25,000 to show up, but four times that number came. Some families had camped out for hours before the doors opened, and many were turned away as supplies were exhausted by 10 a.m. It shows the need, said a solemn school spokesman. This is Jim Hightower saying, Perry is known in Texas as Governor Supercuts, not only for his spiffy hairdo, but also for cutting the budgets of schools and poverty programs and holding down wages. In his 10-year tenure, Perry has created more minimum wage jobs than all other states combined, and his super-rich state now has more families in poverty than any other. Can you say President Supercuts?
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. And, you know, I was thinking about, you know, during the break, after talking with Sandy Kometke from CW, I was thinking about the Obama speech. He was doing that Twitter thing not too long ago where he had the little Twitter town hall. And this gem of a quote came out, and I just, you know, it just grabs me.
And we can't afford to have labor and management fighting all the time.
Yeah, we can't afford to have labor and management fighting all the time. This isn't labor and management fighting. This is management imposing 100 points and then willing to give on one. I don't know that's really fighting. That's more along the lines of the petty dictator, you know, putting out their edict, saying, this is how it will be in my kingdom. And the peasant people basically saying, no, we're going to rise up and we're going to stand up. And good for them, man. You know, Jake, I look at that and I say, good for them.
I guess my question is, what exactly does the CEO expect to hear from these workers? I mean,
seriously. Yes, master.
I'm a little perplexed about that one. You know, if you're really concerned about your people, I think that should manifest itself at the table. You can talk all you want. You can talk for the next 100 years. But until you soften your position and show more respect for the people who made your profits, going out and talking to them in the picket line is just, it's just for show.
You know, I've been watching some of these YouTube videos, and you gotta love YouTube. I love these videos of these guys, the guys who are on strike going around following the scabs who are trying to do their job. And I use the word trying, and very strategically, because like the one guy, it took him like an hour to get the ladder off the truck. And then another guy, he climbs up on the pole. He's standing in front of the box he's supposed to be working on, and he puts the belt around the pole and the box, and he's standing there belted to the box. And the guy's like, how are you going to open it? I mean, just really some funny stuff. And it took me back to when I was on strike back in 94 when freight went on strike, and the supervisors were you know, trying to do the jobs of the guys who were out. And the one guy smashed up a truck, another guy, you know, got stuck up in a trailer, and it was all this stuff. And you know who the happiest people in the entire world were when the strike ended? Those supervisors who had to go and do the jobs. In fact, they were so nice to us for the next 3-4 months because they had actually done the job, and they realized this is hard work, and this actually takes some skill. And there's part of me that says in this, some positive will come out of this for these workers. One, they're not going to get the edict from above. They're not going to have all of these 100 things imposed upon them. They're going to be able to negotiate. And two, their frontline managers, the people who oversee them directly, are going to have a greater appreciation for how skillful and how hard the work it is they actually do.
You know, one thing these corporations understand is the bottom line. Me, for instance, and I'm sure there's a lot of our listeners in the same boat, I chose Verizon because of reunion. Call your local office. Tell them. Let them know. Ask to speak to a supervisor or the highest individual that they will leave you speak to. Let them know that, look, I took Verizon coverage. I gave you my business because you were union. Unless you guys settle this and unless you stop mistreating your employees or worse, try to destroy this union, I might have second thoughts about being your customer. That's one thing they do understand.
But it was nice to see some of the folks out on the picket line today. And look, this is going to continue, and you one day more. You know, they're going to be out there, and they're going to fight, and good for them. And we will be there to help and to support them every step of the way, because I do believe that if they go down, we all go down with them. I don't know if you saw this. There's a bill being introduced in the Pennsylvania legislature by a Democrat. And this is one of these things. I guess the big question is, does government surveillance bother you? Does it bother you when someone's got cameras all over the place? Because what this guy wants to do is put cameras at every light. And it's the frame of, you know, oh, we're going to keep drivers safe and we need to encourage safety. And, you know, there's a couple of, you know, things that pop out into my mind. One is, do I get access to those cameras? Can I watch what's on those cameras? Are we going to be able to view it on the net maybe? And, you know, I look at this story, and again, I keep saying,
I can keep you safe, but who's going to keep you safe from me? And, you know, I think we used to kind of believe, and this is where the Republicans have some points. This is where the libertarian part of the Republican Party has some points. We don't want a overarching tyrannical government. I'm as afraid of government as anybody. And these cameras to me everywhere, I don't want to end up like the UK. I don't want cameras on every corner. I don't want people watching me all the time. And I go, oh, I know. If you're not doing anything wrong, do you really care if they're watching? Yes, I do. And the last idiot that asked me that dumb question, I said, well, you know, how about if every time I follow you everywhere you go, and every time you get into your car, I pull you over and ask you where you're going. Would you get tired of that at some point? And the answer is yes. So, again, the question is, you know, do you want cameras everywhere? And the government is saying yes. We've got legislators who want to say yes. I look at this case in Springfield, Massachusetts. This woman, her name was Tyresha Green, she recorded a 20-minute video of a Springfield policeman beating this guy senseless with a flashlight. Now the guy wants to have her brought up on criminal charges for videotaping him. And, I mean, it was pretty amazing, the beating this guy took. And, of course, it was played a main thing at the trial. But they're trying to go after this woman for recording what went on. And we've seen this in a couple other cases that I've brought up where they've actually arrested people for videotaping the police. And I guess the question is, you know, if it's good enough to videotape me, if the camera's good enough to be pointed at me, why not at them? I'm a big fan of anytime they pull you over, you know, videotape the whole thing.
That's one of your protection. If I can make a comment on this video, you know, cameras at every intersection, I think a lot of it's driven by economic, at least in the eyes of those who run some of the cities. I think in Philadelphia they have them. It's about money, Rick.
It's about the insurance lobby wanting to issue more tickets. It's about the cities wanting to issue more tickets. It's about all that I understand. It's not about really keeping you much safer.
On one level, it's insidious. I mean, you talk about Big Brother.
And, you know, listen, you look at what's going on at Verizon. They're trying to make it sound like these workers are out there, you know, they're running around, they're cutting people's lines. And it's just dumb. These are people who built this company. But they want to throw that out there so that, well, you know, maybe we should start doing this. We should start videotaping everything. And I look at this story in California, and later on we're going to talk to the guy from the San Francisco Chronicle about it. But out in San Francisco, out in the Bay Area Rapid Transit, BART, it's called. In fact, they've got Twitter's got a hashtag, MoveBARTTech, which is kind of funny on the Mubarak thing. But, you know, what they did is, evidently there was a shooting in the neighborhood. The police shot somebody. There was some police shooting. And there was a plan. They thought there was a planned protest. And all the people were going to take the BART system into this protest. So what they did is they had the local mobile phone carrier shut off the service. And again, you know, you start to think about this stuff. You look at what happened in Egypt, where they tried to shut off the internet. And they tried to shut down communications. And in fact, we're talking about a kill switch. You know, there are bills going through our Congress about a kill switch to kill off all communication so we can't talk to each other. And I look at this story just 2 days earlier. They had a service disruption where the transit system basically stopped because their internet went down. And, you know, they're unrelated, but what if? What if the protest was planned during that time and they cut off communications? That's a scary thing to me. And this whole ability of government to be able to have that. And now, oh, it's good. It's for the public good. We're keeping people safe. I'm not buying it. I don't want anyone to have that kind of massive power, which is why, again, I'm against the consolidation of the wireless companies. I'm against having just a handful of companies. I would rather, you know, and I wish there were Republicans who agreed with me. Obviously, they're not, that we need more competition, which means we need more players. It would get boring after a while to watch a football game between the Steelers and the Baltimore Colts or the Indianapolis Colts. It'd get boring after a while if you had two teams. which is basically what's going on with everything else. We've consolidated down to the point where you have just a handful of players. And there's no real competition left. And here again, the more we consolidate down, the easier it is to pull away from us. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. I got an email from Jeb. He said, you know, I have to pass and continue to pass drug tests in order to get and keep my job. He says there are pundits and politicians who call for drug tests for those who receive any kind of food stamps, welfare, Social Security, etc., in order to be eligible. Jeb writes, so let's apply the principle of shared sacrifice from all. He says, I want to see any corporate CEO and top official that receives any handouts or subsidies from the government tested also. He says this includes the head of GE, which pays zero taxes yet receives billions in corporate welfare, so-called farmers like Cargill and ADM, and the head mercenary Blackwater, which is XE, I guess it's she. If they fail their test, their welfare should be stopped immediately. And, look, there are those who would agree. At the end of the day, though, it's about putting that thumb down on people and making it much more difficult for those folks at the margin from being able to access those programs that are going to help them. And I look at what happened in Michigan. Michigan has these bridge cards, and they're the food stamp cards. They put money on them. That's your bank cards. They have kicked 30,000 college students off the bridge card rolls. And what's amazing to me is that the conservatives think this is a great idea. I happen to go to one of these really right-wing websites, where the headline of the story was Saturday Night's Frat Party, sponsored by Uncle Sam. And, you know, they go, you know, on Monday they threw these 30,000 kids off the program, and, you know, they were only buying beer anyway and chips and all of this stuff. And they go into the fact that the colleges featured pages on their websites that would help their students see if they qualified for food stamps and actually encourage them to apply. Because I think the colleges understand, you know, if we've got hungry students, if we've got kids who are going to have to work an extra several hours a week and dedicate that to feeding themselves instead of, oh, I don't know, the reason they're there, educating themselves, maybe we're going to have a situation where they don't succeed or do as well. I go back to myself. When I had money, I didn't have time to go to school. When I had time, I didn't have any money. So you look at something like this and you go, do we believe in investing in education? And I guess according to this, the answer is no. But nowhere in this article does it say anything about Walmart or any of these low-wage employers doing basically the same thing. They seem to be okay with that. But not for these college kids. And, of course, you got the same old canard. I saw a guy. I know somebody who went and bought beer, and he went and bought chewing tobacco. I know a guy. Well, you know, what I always say is, I have a phone. Call and report them. But you never see that. Because it's always good to say, I know a guy, which is BS. You're not going to go be able to buy beer with your welfare card, with a food stamp card. Not happening. But again, it makes a nice frame, and it gives the conservatives something to be really angry about, and they're good at being angry anyway. But in reality, when they start talking about these programs, the conservatives always put a face to it, and especially a color to that face, and it's usually those people. And the local news, and you got to give Fox News credit here. They actually did a very good story where they went out and they found college students who were affected by it. Generally single mothers who are trying to educate themselves, trying to go through school and saying, look, you know, without this, my kids may not eat. Without this, I may not eat. Or I'm going to have to work extra hours. And it's not enough that we're carrying massive amounts of debt because of the student loans that they got to take out. Now you want to strip back the way I'm able to feed myself and my children? But again, you know, it comes back down to which frame do you believe? Do you believe that there's 30,000 college kids out there who have these food stamp cards, or who are just getting all liquored up and eating chips and eating candy? Well, the reality is we know that that's not it. We know what they're doing with it. And it's just frustrating on so many levels. And I love how she finished the article. This Rebecca DeVetti, or whatever her name is, she writes, giving food stamps and government assistance to college students to abuse is just another example of how welfare has perverted our system to not only increase spending, but increase the size of government until the entire nation is just one giant party sponsored by the American taxpayer. Not the fact that these people are working their way through school so that they can be educated, productive members of society who will pay taxes, and to be honest, with the educations that they have, well-paid taxpayers who pay in much more than they're going to get out of this. It's not that. The right wants you to think that any social program that helps people is just a big party. Just a big party. I don't know if you saw the news today. The big news today, obviously, Jake, was the fact that the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals struck down the health care bill as unconstitutional. Now, look, this isn't the end of it. We knew it was going to go to the Supreme Court. But here, again, another political decision. As I was reading some of the reactions, very much a political decision, talking about, you know, free markets. You know, I'm not sure that that's in the Constitution, but, you know, that was part of their thing. And, you know, I look at it, and to me it's pretty simple. This health care bill, whatever we do in health care, everyone has to buy into it. Everyone has to be in. We can't have free riders. We can't have people who decide that they're going to game the system. And then when they get sick, they opt in. Can't have that. It's not going to work. It will all unravel. So for me, They say, well, if you don't get insurance, they're going to fine you. No, you're going to pay a little bit higher taxes. And I don't think I have a problem with that. Either you carry insurance, you protect yourself, or you're going to have to pay some higher taxes so that we will do for you what you're unable or unwilling to do for yourself. And look, I don't know anybody at the bottom of the economic sphere who's saying, no, I don't want to have health care. I don't know any of the 50 million people who are saying, no, I choose to open myself up to bankruptcy and death if I can't get it. It's really an odd argument.
Well, at the end of the day, the conservatives like to make the argument that it's unconstitutional, the mandate. Well, you know what? The very people who say that are the same people who didn't want any health care reform at all and forced this, I'm not going to say half-baked, but half-measure health care, and you and I both know that's exactly what it is, and they forced this system on us. If it was up to them, you wouldn't have any health care reform at all, when in fact, some of us believe that we should have Medicare for all, which I believe is the easiest, simplest way to provide health care for every American.
I'm right there with you on that. Here's a good story, you know, talking about the students who are struggling and the folks who are broke. Because after all, you know, these college kids are just saddled with massive debt, especially kids who go to law school. Which I don't know that going to law school anymore is really a grand bargain. But there's a group of law school graduates, people who graduated from the Thomas N. Cooley Law School and the New York Law School. They are now going to use what they've learned and sue their alma maters for misrepresentation of postgraduate salaries and employment. They're going to sue the Thomas M. Cooley Law School for $250 million and the New York Law School for $200 million, claiming, look, these schools misled us. They gave us numbers that were out there that were unreasonable. They were a selected number of people that they used their wages for, and now we're going to go back after them. And you know what? I got to be honest. There's part of me that says, good for them. These for-profit schools and these marauders, sometimes you have to go after some of them. And if this brings it back into line, good for them. You know, because I don't know where we're going. You know, I worry about when my kids are going to go to college. I worry about how much it's going to cost me. I worry about what it's going to cost the future of this country if they can't go. And their entire generation can't go. What does that mean? And, you know, you look at this, the fact that college kids have to get food stamps. Really? I mean, that should really be a wake-up call. And the fact that we took it away from them is another one of those moments where you go, my God, how insane have we gotten? You know, they're taking on all this debt. They're paying through the nose, and they're trying to cut costs. They're trying to, you know, try not to take on so much so they live on their own in a crummy apartment with several of them probably. They work a part-time job, and it's not enough to feed themselves. So we as a society said, you know what, we're going to make it a little easier for people who are struggling to make ends meet and make sure we feed people. And if you watched last night's debate, and if you listened to Rick Perry, who tomorrow, I guess, is going to announce that he's running for president, this is a Christian nation that cares. It's almost laughable.
And then you look at how he became governor. You were they only got 39% of the vote, Rick. And from what I understand, the Democrats screwed up. they could have won with if they would have been united, and would have showed a strong front. They could have beaten this guy.
Well, here again, no one should.
And
ever,
he walked.
No
he walked
one
in the back
should
door.
Ever win an election with less than 50% of the vote, which is why, again, I'm in favor of instant runoff voting. You should never, there should never, ever, ever be an election decided by less than 50% plus one. Never. Because you end up with situations like that, where now this guy, you know, he got in 39% of the, is that what you said, 39%?
Yep, I heard that figure tonight when they were talking about him and his governorship.
Great. A D student in economics. But when we come back, we're going to talk to a professor of applied economics at the University of Minnesota about how we're going to get this economy moving again. How do we create jobs? How do we solve our debt problems? He's the author of two really great books, Middle Class Union Made and Getting America Back to Work. We're right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I see them blue, only at you and I. is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. CWA President Larry Cohen says 45,000 striking CWA and IBEW workers at Verizon are fighting for the middle class against $1 billion in concessions demanded by the highly profitable company. Cohen says Verizon's justification that its wired business is in decline is no excuse for the effort to squeeze money from the workers.
These are the workers that build the backbone of the entire company, wireless and wireline. They've had union busting at Verizon Wireless for 15 years, fired thousands of workers, closed centers to avoid unionization on the wireless side. So that rings hollow.
The American Dream movement is busy this summer telling Congress what Americans really want when it comes to government spending and the economy. There's a contract for the American Dream that lays out a progressive alternative to austerity policies. Natalie Foster, CEO and co-founder of Rebuild the Dream, says the American Dream movement has a clear message for Congress.
For months, the debate in Washington's been focused on cutting programs that people depend on, rather than creating jobs and making millionaires pay their fair share. We have a very simple message for Washington, and that is that America is not broke. Americans don't want Congress to gut vital programs like Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, but Americans do want jobs, and they want an economy that builds a strong middle class and a future that they can believe in.
Dozens of organizations, including labor unions, the Sierra Club, MoveOn.org, and many others, are partners in the American Dream movement. Foster says 130,000 people wrote the contract for the American Dream online, submitting 20,000 ideas.
And then offline, in every congressional district in the country, there were House meetings that happened where people came together and deliberated the things that had sort of risen to the top online. And from that came the contract for the American Dream, a progressive economic vision for this country.
The democracy addicts are among those reminding Wisconsin Republicans that we're still here. Jesse Russell reports.
The Democracy Addicts are a new organization in Wisconsin that was born out of the protests in February. Sharing their mutual frustration on Twitter, they decided to meet in person over beer. Since then, the movement has expanded to six cities and includes more than 200 everyday citizens, many of whom have never been politically involved before. Last month, the Democracy Addicts started the We're Still Here project, intended to remind Republicans in the Capitol that they aren't going away and to let others know they don't need to stop fighting. You can view the videos at the Democracy Addicts website, DEMAA.org. The following is a snippet from the video by founding member Jenny Dye.
We're still going to keep fighting for the values that we believe in, for what we believe Wisconsin deserves, and for what we want for ourselves and our neighbors. 150 days or so later, we're still here. We're still fighting, and we're asking you to join us.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Your proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So yesterday we talked about Jeff Merkley, Democrat from Oregon. He joined with 22 other Democratic senators saying, you know what, Minority Leader McConnell, we want you to focus the super committee on maybe some jobs. And he writes, let us be clear, our fiscal challenge is directly linked to the jobs crisis, and we cannot solve the former without tackling the latter. And I've been saying this throughout the whole debt debacle, throughout the whole dog and pony show, that nobody's talking about the real important stuff, which to me is trade. That to me is the big thing. And now I'm hearing that this committee, the Super 12, they want to do their work in secret and in some underground bunker till they get their work done. And I'm sure if they do, they'll release their report the night before Thanksgiving, and it's probably not going to get reported until everyone's asleep after stuffing themselves with turkey. So here we go. But how do we get the jobs market going? How do we get the economy going? Here to help us explore that is Professor Richard Levins. He's a professor at the University of Minnesota in their Department of Applied Economics, author of two great books, Middle Class Union Made and Getting America Back to Work. Dr. Levins, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, it's good to talk to you again, Rick. It's really a pleasure.
It's been some time. How have you been?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. Thank you. We're having a beautiful summer here. And, you know, if you grew up in Florida and living in Minnesota, that's about all you can ask, isn't it?
There you go. But, you know, your state you know, got a couple of characters in this presidential race, Snow White and seven dwarfs.
We're well represented for being such a small state, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. So I guess the big question becomes, how do we get this economy going? You know, what you saw in this whole debt debacle, is that going to move us in the right direction? Because I'm saying it's not.
Well, Rick, you know, I unfortunately have had the catbird seat for watching what happens when you cut budgets. Just about a month ago, our legislature got in a tangle up just like the feds, and they shut the government down and laid off everyone that they thought was non-essential. So we laid off 22,000 people because we couldn't agree on a budget in the same month that the entire U.S. economy created 18,000 jobs. So this notion that cutting budgets is going to somehow put people back to work is certainly insane. I mean, there's just no other way to get around it.
Yeah, I mean, that was
every
one of the questions.
Every time they cut the budget, you lay people off. Is laying people off a good way to get to reduce unemployment? Now, you don't need a PhD to figure that one out. That's for damn sure.
Well, evidently the folks in Washington think we do.
I mean, it's one thing to talk about it, Rick, but to be right in the middle of it and watch 22,000 people get laid off because they want to cut the budget and can't cut it enough. In the middle of a high unemployment economy, there's no place for one of those people to go. And to do that just shows you what we've come to. On the other hand, by the way, I want to let everybody know, I've got a new blog. I've finally come into the 20th century, if not the 21st. It's called levinspublishing.com, if anybody wants to take a look at it.
And we've got it linked at the ricksmithshow.com there for you.
There I talk about in one of the recent postings that government spending, when you think about it, is one of the few ways you can create jobs that are virtually guaranteed to be in the United States. We've become experts at creating jobs in China and Mexico and India, but we don't seem to know how to create jobs in the United States. But you put the people at work, rebuilding our infrastructure, you're putting jobs out there that will stay here.
Well, that seems like common sense to me, and it's what we've
That's
been talking
the problem.
About.
You know, here I got a PhD, and all I can do is talk common sense. It's just, it devalues the degree, Rick. What can I say?
Well, maybe you should be like the law students who are suing the schools that they graduated from because they can't find jobs.
It could be because, boy, getting a college degree is not what it used to be in terms of getting a job, is it? You go down here to the Mall of America, and you're going to see a lot of college degrees working there, and they're not in management. They're selling soap.
And the problem with that is that's the kind of economy that we've allowed to be created out from under us. You go back to the Reagan years, and this is the Reagan dream. We are living the Reagan legacy. He wanted us to be a service-based economy. Congratulations. We are a low-wage, service-based economy.
But you said the exact right word, Rick. You said allowed. This is what we've allowed to happen. It didn't happen naturally. You know, out in the country out here, there's a saying, if you see a turtle sitting on a fence post, somebody must have put him there.
Yep.
Well, somebody put us there. We didn't crawl up on that fence post ourselves. We got put there, and we allowed it to happen. And the reason we allowed it to happen because the unions were weakened. I am as sure as that as I'm sitting here.
Now, in my opening, I talked about the fact that a new poll just came out. Said of the people that they polled, 34% of them could come up with $1,000. To me, that says that there's a middle-class problem in this country, that the wealth has been so badly divided that you have the billionaire class that we've allowed to be created again for the second time at the expense of the middle class. And I ask the question, how do you then go back and recreate the middle class that we did, that my grandparents and great-grandparents built from the end of World War II up until Reagan decided he was going to come in and help destroy it?
Right. Well, you know, Rick, I'm probably the only economist in the country that feels this way. But when Stuart Acuff and I put together our program of what we need to do to create jobs, the first thing we put was the Employee Free Choice Act. Because I think if you can't rebuild power on the side of the middle class, we can talk forever about cool ideas,
yep,
but nothing's going to happen. You can't get off that fence post. The loss of the unions cost the middle class their power. Everybody's got a good idea, but it's the ideas that got power behind them that are going to go somewhere. And right now, the power is on the other side.
Yeah, the pendulum surely has swung.
Sure, everybody's talking about how we're going to cut the budget. Even working people are starting to fall in this and say, well, I guess we can't afford our own Social Security. Well, I guess we can't afford our own health care. Well, I guess we can't afford our kids to do this. And meanwhile, you've got the richest 1% we've ever had. What do you mean we're broke? The problem is we've got 99% of the people trying to live on 75% of the income.
Excellent.
Yeah, you feel broke, but you're not. It just feels that way because the income is so messed up right now in the way it's distributed.
Well, you're not talking about redistributing wealth, are you? Because you know all my Tea Party friends. That's an Obama thing.
Yeah, but you know, I'm afraid that. And for good reason. The whole debate on that has kind of centered around what's fair and what's not fair. But unfortunately, we economists just think about what makes the economists go, what makes the economy go. And think about it this way. If you had $100 and you had two people you could give it to, one would be Bill Gates and the other would be a working person who's living on the edge. Who's more likely to spend that $100?
That's the whole thing.
That's why you want to keep income in spread out so people, it'll get spent. What are corporations hoarding now? Is it $2 or $3 trillion? I can't remember. It's a number so large it doesn't register. They're just hoarding that money.
But they keep telling us.
Invested.
But they keep telling us if we give them enough, we give them more. They need more tax cuts. They need a lower rate. They need more deregulation. And once they have enough, then maybe possibly on the third Tuesday of the month, they might consider hiring one person.
Well, I'd like them to give me some more too while they're at it. But we're not talking about who's going to get it here. We're just talking about what's going to make the economy get started.
Right.
And the economy has a spending problem right now. Then it's the spending problem is not that the government has spent too much. It's that working people can't spend enough to jumpstart this thing.
Yeah,
taking more money away from them is not going to fix that.
Right, absolutely. You know, and I look at what's going on in Washington, and I attribute the quote to you, and it's a great quote, and I think about it often. Is you give a middle-class guy a tax cut, he's going to go out and buy a toaster or buy a car or buy something. But if you give a rich person a tax cut, they're going to go out and buy a congressman. And you look at, and I remember it, and you look at what's going on in Washington. And you look at what's going on in Washington and how they've gridlocked any movement forward, any taxing of the folks who have the money.
Right. The one thing that would work is off the table. So now they're just going to bicker over how you're going to gouge the people who don't need to be gouged. Because when you gouge them, it's going to make things worse. So they're just looking at different ways to make things worse right now.
But here's the thing, Professor Levin. You know, you listen to their rhetoric, and they've taken it down to the lowest common denominator. You know, Rick. You know that times are tough. The economy's tough. We're broke. What would you do at your kitchen table? You know, you got to tighten your belt. You know, mac and cheese instead of steak. Mm-hmm. And we buy into those frames.
Sure. The way they frame this thing, it doesn't make any sense when you think about it. But at first glance, that we're broke. Yeah, it depends who the we is. As a country, we are not broke. Yeah, when we say we, when we're talking about me and you, I assume Rick and most people listening, yeah, we're pretty close to the edge right now. But the reason we're close to the edge is because somebody else has skimmed off all the money. And they've just, and that's only because they've set the rules to tilt their way.
Yep.
Taking away collective bargaining right across the river here in Wisconsin is a good example. That's going to tilt things more toward the super rich. It makes it harder for working people to get their share of the pie so they can spend it and grow the economy.
Which is why the billionaire class has funded so many of the attack groups that have supported Walker, and which is why Walker took the phone call with the phony Koch brother, because he
and
really
talked
thought
about his friend, there exactly. His old buddy. I know. I haven't tried to call. I just assumed he wouldn't take a call from me. But, you know, I did go over there a couple times for those rallies. It's a tough situation. It really is. And it shouldn't be that way. There's no reason to be attacking working people right now, except that there's a 1% of the people who know things are going that way, and why not get it all?
Yeah, well, I always go back to the Jay Gould quote, the railroad magnate from the 1880s who said, I can easily pay half the working class to kill the other half, and you've got to be able to divide people. And the wealth class is masterful at slicing and dicing us and keeping us at each other's throats so that we don't go after them.
Even public employees versus private employees, union employees versus non-union employees, you name it. Somebody's at fault, except those people you never see because they're so rich they don't come out.
Yep.
It's really strange. You know, the super committee you mentioned, I can't even imagine a jobs program coming out of that. Can you?
No, nothing's going to come out of that because all of the Republicans who were appointed took the Norquist anti-tax pledge. So there's going to be no revenues raised. This is going to be cut, gut, and punish. That's what this is going to be about.
And by cut, we mean us. They're not going to cut the rich. The super rich don't depend on Social Security the way that you and I are going to try to do it. You know, if somebody down here in Burnsville, just south here, won that $220 million Powerball, I imagine their interest in Social Security fell off pretty rapidly. Mine would. But most of us, if you cut that, you're cutting us.
Absolutely.
And what in the world are people voting for people who want to cut them?
Because it's what they see on TV, Dr. Levins. It's all, just all it is.
Well, they need to get a new channel in because They need to listen to Rick Smith's show. That's what they need to do.
And they need to read your books, Middle Class, Union Made, and Getting America Back to Work.
Before you go, let me tell you that the Middle Class, Union Made is now for free. Read it online at Levins Publishing. And the Getting America Back to Work, we just put a Labor Day special on there. They're all half price, so no excuse not to get one and read it and get your mind right, okay?
Outstanding. Professor Levins, I appreciate the time. Always great to talk to you. We'd love to have you get back again real soon.
It sure is good to talk to you, Rick, and hang in there, okay?
Yeah, we are. Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
GOP land is all of Twitter now that Texas Governor Rick Perry has announced that he's ready to ascend to the White House. His candidacy was actually launched the week before at a prayer-a-palooza he held in Houston, where he consecrated himself as the Christian candidate. Only about 30,000 evangelicals attended Perry's public prayer spectacle in a cavernous football stadium, but the presidential wannabe got saturation coverage by the media, which has gone gaga over yet another small-minded right-wing Texas governor. If the media had any real journalistic curiosity about what kind of national, quote, leader this guy would be, they could have slipped away on that same day to the city's convention center. There, a much larger crowd of 100,000 Houstonians had gathered in bleak testimony to Perry's gubernatorial leadership. They were some of Houston's many low-income children and parents struggling to make ends meet in Perry's hard-scrabble Texas economy. These needy families had come to a citywide back-to-school event where backpacks, school supplies, uniforms, haircut vouchers, immunizations, and bags of food were being provided by the school district. Officials had expected 25,000 to show up, but four times that number came. Some families had camped out for hours before the doors opened, and many were turned away as supplies were exhausted by 10 a.m. "It shows the need," said a solemn school spokesman. This is Jim Hightower saying, Perry is known in Texas as Governor Supercuts, not only for his spiffy hairdo, but also for cutting the budgets of schools and poverty programs and holding down wages. In his 10-year tenure, Perry has created more minimum wage jobs than all other states combined, and his super-rich state now has more families in poverty than any other. Can you say President Supercuts?
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425. Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Also, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. In the latest edition of Republicans Gone Wild, you look at this, I gotta be honest, this budget secretary, Charles Dignaghi, you gotta wonder what he's thinking about his wife. First, she's arrested for stealing something from TJ Maxx in January. Then she's accused of ripping off one of the grocery stores in the neighborhood for $955. And then charged with DUI and you know, going on this wild chase. And you go, wow, what is going on here? Midlife crisis, I don't know. But today the news coming out saying she's not accepted into one of the accelerated rehabilitative disposition programs. She may actually do some time, the way I'm looking at it. And, you know, not good for the Corbett administration. They're having some real problems. But here's the thing. I get it. You know, times are tough. Times are tough. Wages are poor. The state's cutting back. It's hard to get by. But $955. Anyway, let's go to the phones. I got Stosh on line one. How you doing tonight, Stosh?
Oh, man, I'm really upset with what's really going on here. But I got one word that I'm going to question. The word treason, isn't what these teabaggers and the corporate Republicans, could that be considered treason?
I was making the argument with this when they were holding the country hostage over this debt ceiling. That was the argument I was making.
So what's the what can be done since they're treasonous? Could they be shot? What can be done?
Well, they can be. Under the law, yeah, shot, hung, you know, the whole nine yards. And when, if Rick Perry becomes president, the guy who's killed more people through state-sponsored murder than anybody, he might be the guy just to do it. I'm being facetious, of course. He wouldn't be hanging his own party. But still, yeah, I mean, I think it's treasonous what they've been doing.
Can't something be done with behind the word treason as to what they're doing?
Well, you got to have the members. You got to have the people in Congress, and we don't. You don't have the numbers. And I'm telling you, people better get energized for this next election because I'm afraid we're going to lose the Senate. The way things look, Democrats are defending 23 seats, and Republicans are only defending 10. So we could lose four. And I've targeted four. I think we're going to lose four seats.
Which four is that? Do you have an idea which four they would be?
Not off the top of my head.
I understand. Don't worry about it.
No. But there's four of them that I've thought of that are going to be in trouble, I think, this time around.
Well, we got to get you on the satellite, homeboy. Get this stuff out. out here that we're hearing in Pennsylvania the nation needs to hear.
You know, we're working on it, you know, doing everything we can. The four that I see us losing, I see us losing Jim Webb in Virginia. I think he's going to go down. I see us losing one of the Nelson twins, either one from Florida or one from Oklahoma. Possibly Claire McCaskill in Missouri. That looks a little shaky there. Cantwell had a real hard time in Washington last election. Not quite sure how that's going to go. But there are some names out there, people who are, I think Kent Conrad's spot, he's retiring. North Dakota, I think he's definitely in the loss column. So right there, you've got a number of possibilities that you could see for flipping.
With those people in those districts, aren't they aware that what's going on is hurting them? If we lose these four,
well, you know,
aren't they aware?
Here again, they're trying to go to the middle. Everyone keeps telling Democrats to go to the middle, go to the middle. You want to look centrist, and I keep saying that, you know, the old Harry Truman quote. You know, if a voter has the choice between a Democrat, a Republican, and a Democrat that acts like a Republican, they're going to take the Republican. So stop acting like a Republican. Be a Democrat. Run on our principles. Run on
right.
Our principles and take your beating if you take it. But, don't give up on your principles.
I bet the founding fathers are spinning in their graves with this corporate attitude is going to the people.
Yeah, well, they were definitely not corporatists, as our Federalist friends like to portray them to be.
Yeah.
But, you know, that is what it is, and that's why we've got to get energized, why we've got to get people out to the polls, got to get people educated on this stuff. Because what worries me is I only see one Republican that has a shot that the Democrats might be able to pick up. And that's the Scott Brown seat, and it looks like Elizabeth Warren, the woman who was up for the Consumer Financial Committee, that she got shot down. She's maybe running for that. So we'll see. But Brown's polling really well in Massachusetts.
Okay. Hopefully, the people in Massachusetts will get behind it.
I am hoping because I'm really concerned about this election, because if the Republicans keep the House, if they end up getting, you know, the majority in the Senate, and even if Obama wins, we're going to have complete gridlock. But if it goes that way, I see Obama losing. So we need to get active, need to get engaged.
All right, Rick.
I appreciate it, Stosh. Always great talking to you, brother. You look at what's out there. You kind of got to worry, because really I see Webb's seat going. I don't think Kane's gonna win that. Herb Kohl, who knows where that goes? Look what happened to Feingold. The Nelson twins, the one from Florida, the one from Nebraska. One of them could go.
Kohl might be helped by what happens in Wisconsin this year. Hopefully, it looks like the progressives are making a real, and labor in Wisconsin is making a real resurgence.
But you never know. Maria Cantwell had a rough time the last time around, if I remember.
Yes.
So you've got some names out there that
Nelson in Nebraska. Well, you know, he's very conservative. I'd hate for the fact that he's a Democrat. You hate to lose him, but his votes, his record is very, very tenuous as far as I'm concerned. But you still don't want to lose him. You still don't want the Democrats to lose control of the Senate. That could be a disaster.
Even Amy Klobuchar in Minnesota, she's up. So you don't know. I mean,
great senator.
But again, you know, you only got really one Republican that is going to have any problem, and I think that's going to be Brown. But you know, the rest of them, I think they're shoo-ins.
I mean, he's played it smart. If you've been watching what he's done, first of all, anybody that knows Massachusetts, you know, the conservatives like to call it the People's Republic. Well, it is. It's a state that tends to vote to the left, and he knows that. And he's gone to the right. He's gone to the center. And he early on, especially, he did some things that were popular. And I think he, from a political standpoint, he's been pretty smart. He might be tough to beat.
Yep. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Zenny Abraham. He's a writer at the San Francisco Chronicle. We're going to talk about that transit situation out in California, where I guess it's the company that decided, it's the rail company, the transit company who cut the mobile services. So we'll talk to him when we come back.
smart policy. And sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer's a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Standing tall against a multinational corporate agenda, The Rick Smith Show.
Madison, Cairo, fascism track, next stop Ohio. Trying to kill labor, that's their jihad, huh? What's gonna happen when the people all rise up? That thing is...
Well, you know, the thing that they may do is they may turn off the switch. I mean, you keep seeing these bills popping up in Congress. They want to kill switch on the internet because, we need to protect you. And I love that frame because, we're going to keep you safe. But who's going to keep us safe from you? That's the question I have. And you look at this situation out in California where they just decided to turn off the communications for people on the rabbit transits. Kind of makes me wonder. Here to get to the bottom of that, Zenny Abraham, a writer activist. He's got the website Zenny62.com. We've got a link over at our site at TheRickSmithShow.com. Just click on Zenny Abraham's name. It'll take you right there. Zenny, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thanks. I'm not a writer activist. I'm just a blogger who I just tell the truth, man.
All righty. Well, I'll have to kill my producer after the show over that. you can write about that. Tell me what went on here. You know, what's the skinny here? What happened?
Basically, this caught my attention because on Twitter, actually, and I am in Georgia, as my speech, as we were saying off radio, to make a long story short, I come out about once a month to see after my mom, help her out, her health is fine. But, you know, you get to that point where, as an only child, they have that responsibility of being with your mom.
Yep.
I live in Oakland. I ride BART pretty much every day, and I call her to see if she's okay from there. So I thought, well, geez, you know, I couldn't call out to her. And then 2 days before, BART had a network outage they still can't explain happened. The computers just shut down. So trains just shut down, and they shut down for the rest of the night. So so just consider if BART had decided to interrupt cell phone service, as they say, rather than block it, 2 days ago, and then the network shut down for the train system. So you're on a train underwater, and you can't call out to say to anybody, hey, help me. That would have been frightening.
Absolutely.
And so that's what caused me to blog the first blog, and it went from there, and it was picked up by other outlets. Meanwhile, Bard complained to SF Gate, since that's where I'm most prominent, because I know how to write a post that hits a Google News. I think two of the four first blog posts on this were mine. I mean, actually, the two accusing Bard of doing something illegal were both mine. And they complained to SF Gate that because I focused on the cell phone jamming issue and the method, that what they did was legal because it didn't focus on, because of the method was different. But that's not the FCC's, the Federal Communications Commission's concern. The concern of the FCC with respect to the Communications Act of 1934 is that cell phone service was interrupted. It doesn't matter that it was by BART or a carrier, because they investigated Verizon earlier this year for a cell phone outage. It's just that it was interrupted.
Right. So in looking at this, and again, you know, the way it was presented to me when we were talking about it earlier is that, you know, the computers went down, the trains basically stopped, and they didn't, you know, it wasn't their doing, or maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, who knows. Here on a couple of days later, they decide that they're going to shut down communications. What happens if they happened at the same time is what you're saying.
Exactly. And not only that, Bart, for reasons unbeknownst to me, has taken a bunker mentality that seems to be a holdover from the Oscar Grant murder in 2009. And the problem is that there was an organization, Bart was trying to prevent a protest by an organization called No Justice, No Bart, which started in 2009 and has protested the most recent shooting and murder of a man by the name of Charles Hill on July 2nd. At Civic Center Bart. What happened was Mr. Hill was drunk. Bart police claimed that this man lunged and tried to attack them with a knife. However, video camera from the station shows that what Mr. Hill actually did was he threw a knife in the general direction of a police officer, a very small one. It flew past him, and it missed him by a good 6 feet, and then it ricocheted off the train behind him. The officer moved in to open fire on Mr. Hill. That is what set off the wave of the most current protests we have today.
Right.
And, you know, the problem right now is it's all morphed into a situation where Bart's acting as if it's at war, the protesters are acting as if they're at war with Bart as opposed to filing lawsuits or, you know, trying to impact the Bart board elections that are come up next year. And all this is, you know, taken on a direction that is basically counterproductive.
It is counterproductive, but the reason that I've gotten into it is, look, at the end of the day, do you have the right to peaceful assembly or don't you? And, you know, I look at this and I say, you know, in Congress they're trying to push this kill switch idea. Is this what we can expect of our government and of agencies that you know, do work for we the people, that, you know, when we want to assemble or when you're going to have a protest, that you're going to have these kind of scenarios popping up where they're cutting communication, they're cutting internet, maybe even cutting the service of the trains to begin with.
Right. I don't want to be seen as criticizing the protests. I understand what they're doing. I just, having worked for five politicians, I understand the power of a lawsuit. I understand the power of the vote.
Right.
And all I'm saying is, you know, I would really pray that the people who are against this sort of thing take an approach that doesn't. See, here's the problem that I have. That, first of all, what Bart did harmed ordinary citizens. It had the potential to harm only ordinary citizens, like myself or you if you were on the train at that time. What Bart's argument is that the protesters are interrupting citizens who are trying to get home to their kids, and I get that, okay? What I would pray the protesters do is file a class action lawsuit against Bart. Hit Bart really where he lives rather than, you know, hurting other people, and that way they'll get more allies, because what's happening is that you've got neither protesters nor Bart gaining allies in either case. You see what I'm getting at?
Right.
And meanwhile, the whole culture and the whole problem basically remains the same and nothing changes.
I agree with you, but, you know, I look at there are an awful lot of protests in D.C., and a lot of people use the public transportation there. What happens if they do some of those things that they did in San Francisco or out in your area there?
Right. Well, it's scary. Unquestionably scary. You know, I'm all about getting to a point where we make sure this sort of thing doesn't happen, and that's why I encourage people to file a complaint with the FCC, because Bart again, is under the, and there are people who've emailed me who I guess have issues with me even blogging, but complain that, hey, you know, you're wrong because of the method issue, and Bart, that's Bart's take. But the FCC has investigated other organizations and Verizon and others. I'm still doing research on this. So that's not it. So the bottom line is the government is also there to be used as a tool to protect us against other people. That's, you know, and other organizations, you know. And the problem is that sometimes we don't use it that way.
Right.
You know, we don't make the government work for us.
I absolutely agree.
And here's a golden opportunity to turn around and say, hey, look, you've got the FCC right there. There's a litany of evidence and examples of them investigating organizations like the wireless carriers or like BART. Why not activate the FCC now and have them do precisely that? In fact, having said that, there are two people who actually filed a Freedom of Information Act to BART to get more information on why they choose to go that route and how they actually did it, because BART's claiming that they had the right to do it because the cell phone providers in their contract stated, but that's got nothing to do with, that's not going to stop the FCC from investigating. The FCC doesn't care about a clause in a contract that by its existence invites an organization to do an act that is illegal.
Right, and beyond that, I don't want them to have that kind of power. I don't want someone to be able to, at the drop of the hat, make a decision that we're just going to cut this service off, and everybody's affected by it across the board. And you know what? As you pointed out, what happens if there were an accident? What happens if you have some type of somebody has a heart attack and you've cut off the service?
Right. But the problem is that here's the thing: they don't legally have the power to do it. The trouble is that we let them do it by not reacting. And someone, you know, that's why I'm saying you've got to really have an organization. I mean, you know, what's funny about the whole thing from a global perspective is you've got people like Sarah Palin with millions of dollars in political action committees, but, you know, I don't see a move-on type organization that has millions of dollars that would say, hey, look, boom, immediately lawsuit, right? And that scares an organization. That makes an organization commit a lot of legal dollars and say, you know what, we're not going to do this anymore. We're tied up. But right now, there's no incentive to do that because of the way they're being approached. Right now, it's oh, call the police and let the police do their job. And, you know, so it becomes this television event in the news. People like to see things bleed and nothing, and it becomes part of our culture and nothing changes.
I absolutely agree. And then down the road, I mean, I guess the biggest part, Zenny, is for me is this whole idea of communications and doing what they did in Egypt, trying to shut off communications.
Mm-hmm.
Especially you look at the Lieberman, I'm not sure if it's his bill or if he's just a co-sponsor, but he's one of the people pushing this idea of a kill switch.
It's very scary. No, that's very scary. And, you know, I don't know what the answer is other than what I had said before. I really would hope that as a society we become more vigilant in asking our government to protect us from actually other people in government.
Right.
You know? That's really, I think, what it is. And make them stand up and do it. And it's unfortunate that, you know, there's some organizations, even news organizations, that allow themselves to be bullied by organizations, and they don't cover this sort of thing.
And this is exactly the kind of stuff.
The bloggers.
Yeah, this is exactly the stuff that needs to be covered, and that's why we asked you to come on and explain it to us. And I appreciate it. Thanks so much. Keep up the great work.
Follow me at Zennie62, ZENNIE62.
We will do. We've got a link at our site at therickSmithShow.com. Just click on Zenny Abraham's name; it'll take you right to his website, Zennie62.com. Zenny, thanks so much.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate the time.
We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
To the Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Let me be clear. I am not gay. I never have been gay.
Being busted inside a jar, it's not a thing that a right-wing Republican should do. All your talk of family values, flushed away in scandalous loo news, and all your denials are stinking like piles of political
what?
Tap three times with your loafer if you want me. Twice on the tank if the answer is no. No. A Dirty Larry.
Yep, yep. Dirty Larry. Oh, good old Larry Craig. I wonder what he's doing these days. But speaking of the right-wing Republican who, well, geez, you know, doing the, I guess on the wrong side of the fence, if you will. This story from the Indianapolis Star suggests that State Representative Philip Hankel, one of the guys who evidently posted on Craigslist, he responded to this post on Craigslist, offering a young man $80 plus a nice healthy tip if he had a really good time on Saturday night. Pick this kid up. After some haggling over money, took him to the Marriott Hotel, and then decided to tell the kid that he was going to have a really good time with, that he was a politician. So here's this 18-year-old kid, and 64-year-old Hankel tells him he's a politician, and the kid gets kind of freaked. And he says, well, you know, I don't know that I really want to do this. The state representative kind of, you know, forces him, kind of, you know, pushes him a little bit and kind of, you know, and the kid's like, I don't really want to. He runs into the bathroom, calls his sister. This is where the fun starts. Because you've got this right-wing, anti-gay, God-fearing, Bible-thumping, in God we trust, license plate-wearing state representative. Who's basically got this kid locked in a bathroom. Well, the sister comes to pick the kid up, and she's screaming at the guy. The guy offers her his iPad, his BlackBerry, gives him a bunch of money, basically, you know, anything you want just to go away. So they leave, and this is where the fun begins, because evidently the representative, the good God-fearing, Bible-thumping, right-wing, anti-gay conservative, his wife calls the BlackBerry that he just gave away. And the sister of the 18-year-old boy who
The 64-year-old state representative, the good God-fearing right-wing Christian man, wanted to have sex with. This girl proceeds to tell the wife that whole story. And the reaction of the wife was priceless. "Just don't call the police," was her response. Nothing really crazy, just please don't call the police. So the very next phone call, and this is, I guess, all records, the very next phone call is this good God-fearing right-wing, in God we trust, license plate-wearing representative, who then calls the kid back and says, basically you've just ruined me. Because, now that the cat was out of the bag, however you want to say it. But here again, we were talking about this earlier. Look, when you run on that kind of a position, when you run on the platform that you're, don't be surprised when you get busted. Just like Larry Craig and the Little Lulu, just like, all of them they've had their little, Mark Foley, Bob Allen, the guy in Florida who still, to this day, will always be my favorite. Always. You remember Bob Allen, the state senator?
Yes, I do.
Big, burly guy. He was a big guy. He was walking through the park one day. Now, this is a guy who every year, while he was a representative in Florida, introduced a piece of legislation that said if two men have sex in a bathroom in a park, it's a felony. You're in jail. $1,000 fine. So here is representative walking through the park one day. I don't know if it was May, so I'm not going to sing the song. Starts to rain. Little thunder. He's frightened. Like Little Red Riding Hood, scared. Runs into the bathroom. Very large black man. Rain, thunder, large black man. He's really afraid, scared. Oh, boy. What should I do? What should I do? What's the first thought that comes to his mind? Reach into his pocket and offer to pay the very large black man for sex. I'm sorry, that's really not my first thought, but it was his. And, of course, the very large black man happens to be an undercover police officer who then takes him into custody. And I say, good. He got what he deserved because he's a hypocrite. If somebody who never took a position on the issue end up doing that, that's a personal issue. That's between them and their family. You'll work it out. You'll find your path. But if you're actively seeking to destroy and to harm others while secretly being that person that you despise and loathe, you get what you deserve, man. And he's getting every bit that he deserves. He's probably going to lose his seat, probably going to lose the house, who knows. Here's another good story. You love good sex stories? Here's another one. Spring Hill, Tennessee. Evidently, this 56-year-old man has suffered from a mental disorder, which causes him to perform strange sex acts on himself, nobody else. So evidently the police caught him in the middle of a lewd act with a 2-foot-high baby doll that he had cut holes into. Problem was he was on school property. Yep. I'm guessing he's going to throw his hat into the ring for the Republican presidential nomination anytime now. Maybe it'll be him and that Casey Anthony. Going, really? A doll in public?
And it'd be interesting to find out what was he charged for. Public lewdness, trespassing. Be nice to know
He was charged with lewd and lascivious behavior.
There you go.
So, again.
So they cut him a break. They didn't nail him for trespassing.
But on school grounds. I mean, here's the thing, though.
Why would he do it in school grounds?
Why ask? Why would a right-wing, God-fearing, Bible-thumping, in God we trust, license plate-driving, conservative, Republican, state senator, or state representative from Indiana go on Craigslist and try and pick up an 18-year-old boy? I have no idea. Just like why did the guy from, Cumberland County, one of the commissioners, videotape all of the young boys he was fiddling around with?
Mr. Barkley.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what makes people do what they do, but all I say is don't be a hypocrite about it. If your thing is young boys, well, God bless you, as long as they're 18. But don't be a hypocrite about it. That's all I ask.
I think the public, although it can be fickle at times and sometimes it doesn't care, but I do believe that one thing the public is pretty hard on, and that's hypocrisy.
Absolutely. You know, it wouldn't surprise me one bit if someone like Rick Santorum got caught doing the same thing. Wouldn't surprise me a bit because of how venomous he is. The hatred that comes out of his mouth, which is kind of weird, because if you watch the debates last night, he was actually defending gay people in Iran, which I'm going, really? is there a hierarchy to hate, that we hate the Iranians more than gay people?
Did you get the feeling? And I took some time to really listen to it a little bit in length. It seemed like some of the Republican candidates in this debate, Republican debate, were trying to odd God the other one.
Yep.
You know, I'm a better Christian than you are, and
that's because I'm a devout Christian,
and
that's because
I want you to know that. And it was like, you know, did it ever strike you, Rick? And I talked to Pete yesterday, my buddy, and you know Pete. We got into a discussion about Republicans and how they tend to appeal to the religious right and how there's this real disconnect of what they say publicly about God and religion and Christianity and how the policies that they advocate affect society. And what would, according to the Bible now, which is what they say they follow, their positions, are they diametrically opposed to what Christ taught, or are they really true Christians in what they say and they do? And all too often, I look at what they say and what their positions do to society, and there's this huge disconnect, Rick.
Well, I mean, Rick Perry, as governor of Texas, state-sponsored killing of 235 people. There's that one thing in the little ten rules that they want to plaster all over the place, thou shall not kill. That keeps coming up. You know, one of the two things that I think are actually criminal, you know, stealing and killing and lying under certain circumstances. But if you listen to last night's debate, evidently lying is one that they don't generally follow, because probably they weren't under oath. But again, you know, you look at these folks and yeah, we're going to have this, my God is bigger than your God, the General Boykins thing. We're going to have this for a while because Perry is going to bring in this mega church mentality. We're going to see a lot of this. And mark my words, you're going to see the crazy Christian network full blast. They're going to set up their 1,000 church seminars and they're going to do their whole beaming out the satellite stuff because, one of the listeners sent me this email, and it's the American flag. And in the American flag, where the stars are, they put a cross. And, you know, you couldn't have been more apt to have that cross in there because that's where we're going. And I've always said, as soon as we decide that this is truly a Christian nation, that's when the fun will begin. Because then you're going to see the Catholics and the evangelicals going at it, and the different sects of each fundamentalist religion going after each other, and that's when the fun will begin. Because then that's when the real battling starts.
Well, I think that's where Romney's vulnerable in the Republican Party. I think they're going to go after him for his religion. Now, the Republican Party will say, no, I love this one. Oh, we're a big tent. No, that's not an issue. When, in fact, you know it is a big issue, especially among conservatives.
Yeah, well, I watched the whole thing, and it's, Snow White and the other seven.
Let me put it this way. According to that,
did not impress me at all.
After that performance, I think, unless things improve, if I were President Obama, I wouldn't feel threatened at this point.
The only thing that
can change.
There were things that they all universally agreed on. They all hate Obama. None of them will raise taxes. And they're all thumpers. That seems to be the general consensus.
Did you catch the one for 10?
Yeah,
Of course they all said no, because they needed to appease the right wing of the Republican Party. I mean, and I do believe this. Some commentators said probably several of these candidates will either regret it or have to rescind that promise. Because if we're going to make any headway at all in reducing this debt, there's going to have to be compromise. And you would think on the Republican side, that's a pretty good deal.
Well, at the end of it, for them to say that tells me that they're not leaders, that they're just ditto heads. And eventually, if I were in that audience, I would be infuriated by them taking that position. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Dave Johnson from the Campaign for America's Future. Right back after this.
Rick Smith. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. CWA President Larry Cohen says 45,000 striking CWA and IBEW workers at Verizon are fighting for the middle class against $1 billion in concessions demanded by the highly profitable company. Cohen says Verizon's justification that its wired business is in decline is no excuse for the effort to squeeze money from the workers.
These are the workers that build the backbone of the entire company, wireless and wireline. They've had union busting at Verizon Wireless for 15 years, fired thousands of workers, closed centers to avoid unionization on the wireless side. So that rings hollow.
The American Dream movement is busy this summer telling Congress what Americans really want when it comes to government spending and the economy. There's a contract for the American Dream that lays out a progressive alternative to austerity policies. Natalie Foster, CEO and co-founder of Rebuild the Dream, says the American Dream movement has a clear message for Congress.
For months, the debate in Washington has been focused on cutting programs that people depend on, rather than creating jobs and making millionaires pay their fair share. We have a very simple message for Washington, and that is that America is not broke. Americans don't want Congress to gut vital programs like Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, but Americans do want jobs, and they want an economy that builds a strong middle class and a future that they can believe in.
Dozens of organizations, including labor unions, the Sierra Club, MoveOn.org, and many others, are partners in the American Dream movement. Foster says 130,000 people wrote the contract for the American Dream online, submitting 20,000 ideas.
And then offline, in every congressional district in the country, there were House meetings that happened where people came together and deliberated the things that had sort of risen to the top online. And from that came the contract for the American Dream, a progressive economic vision for this country.
The democracy addicts are among those reminding Wisconsin Republicans that we're still here. Jesse Russell reports.
The Democracy Addicts are a new organization in Wisconsin that was born out of the protests in February. Sharing their mutual frustration on Twitter, they decided to meet in person over beer. Since then, the movement has expanded to six cities and includes more than 200 everyday citizens, many of whom have never been politically involved before. Last month, the Democracy Addicts started the We're Still Here project, intended to remind Republicans in the Capitol that they aren't going away and to let others know they don't need to stop fighting. You can view the videos at the Democracy Addicts website, DEMAA.org. The following is a snippet from the video by founding member Jenny Dye.
We're still going to keep fighting for the values that we believe in, for what we believe Wisconsin deserves, and for what we want for ourselves and our neighbors. 150 days or so later, we're still here. We're still fighting, and we're asking you to join us.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
The rich who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed. With your arrogance, your ignorance, and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
And
welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. You know, and going back to that debate, I got to tell you, I love the argument that marriage should be a federal issue. But whether the people who decide to get married live or die is a state's issue, you know, be it health care, be it, you know, how we take care of food stamps, be it, you know, any number of things. And that what we should be doing is we should be having a federal budget that cuts guts and punishes people so that we can give more money to the very, very wealthy and the people who then can take the money that we give them and afford health care and food and all the things that we're struggling to do. Amazing stuff. Our friend Dave Johnson over at the Campaign for America's Future, ourfuture.org, wrote a great piece, Austeritocracy Idiocy, Austere Idiocy. That's a made-up word. Budget cuts take money out of the economy. It's over at ourfuture.org. We've got a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. Dave, thanks for taking time for me.
I'm glad to be here, Rick.
You know, I look at this this idea that somehow, you know, on the federal level, marriage is, you know, the federal government should be overseeing marriage, but, you know, the economy, not so much.
Yeah, really, really. You know, it occurred to me, I was thinking about these cuts, and it occurred to me, so what do they mean, cut? And, you know, if you cut Medicare, it doesn't cut the health problems that old people have. And I started thinking about that. So what is it actually doing? And you're not cutting the problems of government when you cut the government's budget. Those are all things. The reason the government does them is because they're things that have to be done. So what's going on here? And it occurred to me, you're not cutting the cost. You're shifting the cost.
Yep.
So when you take old people's health care and you put it on the backs of the old people themselves, the government spends less money. But the overall economy isn't spending less money. So you're not helping the economy in any way. It's not pulling that cost out of the economy. It's still there. But in fact, with Medicare, for example, you're actually making it a bigger cost on the overall economy. But also, though, you're taking away the function of democracy where all of us are supposed to watch out for and take care of each other. So when we pool our money and then we're old, and we help each other by helping with the health care, we're taking care of each other, and the least of us is taken care of. Now, what they're trying to do by cutting these costs is they're trying to make it so that the least of us aren't taken care of, and the rest of us, you know, we have to pay sometimes tremendous costs, but they say, hey, it's not my, you can't take my money to do that. But the idea of democracy was we were going to all work together for things. So I started thinking about that, and that's what I was writing about today.
Yeah, I mean, right from the beginning, though, your premise is off because they don't believe in democracy. They don't believe in we the people, and they definitely don't believe in, you know, the teaching of your brother's keeper.
Well, let's look at even a more practical side of this. Aside from the philosophy of whether everybody should be as greedy as they can and live off of other people and then let everybody else rot if that's what happens. The practical answer here, and what got me thinking about this, was a news report from France. They have done this austerity, which, you know, it means, you know, you cut the government.
Right.
Well, we've got some deficits because we cut taxes for the rich, so now we have to cut the government to pay for those deficits. You know, hear it all the time. And the news report, the headline is French growth sputters to a halt in second quarter. And I'm just going to read a little bit of the news report. The French government was put under further pressure to cut deeper into spending after figures Friday showed growth in Europe's second biggest economy ground to a halt in the spring, with the worse than expected French growth figures suggesting a possible budget shortfall this year. Government ministers may have to find additional savings. In other words, they cut the budget. That is literally taking money out of the economy. And so their economy slowed down, and so they're getting less tax revenue, okay? So they have to cut the budget more, they say, because they made the budget deficit worse. So here's what I wrote. I like this. Right, the cuts are slowing the economy, which means the deficits are worse, so they have to find additional savings. Cutting government, taking money out of their economy, slowed their economy, so they think they'll solve the problem by taking more money out of their economy. So I call that austere idiocracy. No, austere idiocy.
And it is idiocy. And it's lunacy.
It's your made-up word, you know.
And I stumbled over it, too. But, you know, it is lunacy because it's the same exact argument that they're making in Washington. And Boehner's tried to say that, you know, by cutting spending, we've created jobs. And you go, well, wait a second. No, we lost a whole bunch of government jobs. It's a negative, I think.
Well, not just the government jobs, but what about all the contractors that do construction? Everybody else. I mean, all these jobs, all these things the government does are things they have to do. So I've got another paragraph here. I just like it so much, I got to read it to you today. The idea is that by taking that money out of the economy, there will be more money in the economy. And with less money in the economy, the resulting increases of money in the economy will bring more tax revenue. This strategery was thought up by the crowd that claims cutting taxes increases tax revenue. It's so preposterous when you think about it for a minute. They're going to cut back on infrastructure, you know, the roads and the bridges and the ports and the things, and then they're going to try to sell more stuff overseas after cutting back on our ability to make stuff and sell stuff because you can't, you know, the ports are less staffed, et cetera, et cetera. You know, they're going to cut back on research. They're going to cut back on education, all, you know, providing well-educated employees. They're going to cut back on all that. That's going to make the economy grow, they say. You know, I mean, and then, like France, they've taken it to the next step because, of course, when they cut their budget, their economy slowed. They're saying, oh, we have to find more budget cuts because the economy's slowing down.
Well,
they did this in England, too.
Well, wait till the Gang of 12. Wait till these 12 do their wonder. And I'm telling you, the Democrats, they lost this before they even started by putting Max Backdoris on this. But at the end of it, this is what they're going to be doing. How much can we cut and how bad to the bone can we go?
Well, that's how they solved this made-up debt ceiling crisis. It's a two-step thing. First, they're going to take $1 trillion out of the economy right away. Then they've got this 12-member super Congress that's supposed to come up with, you know, a balanced approach, with half of them already having pledged, no matter what, to never raise any taxes. So the best we better hope for is that they're going to go to a stalemate, because the other thing they're going to do then is cut Medicare and Social Security if they don't. And then if they do or don't, there's still another, if they don't come up with specific cuts, then it's what they call an across-the-board cut of another $1.2 trillion or so. So they're going to take at least two and a half trillion dollars out of the economy, and then see how good it does.
Yeah.
And we know what's going to happen. It's going to make everything worse. But their plan is then that'll make Obama look bad. So by then they'll be in charge and they don't care.
Yeah, we should have a smoking economy by then. The same thing here in Pennsylvania. You know, they're pulling money out of the economy. They're laying off teachers. They're going to end up raising property taxes, and they expect that to help turn the economy around.
Well, Rick, that's the word to use when you hear about these budget cuts. Say, oh yeah, they're going to take it out of the economy. We'll call it budget cuts. Call it taking it out of the economy. But the thing to remember is what they're doing is they're shifting costs. They're not cutting those costs. That doesn't cut the cost of the larger economy. In fact, if you cut old people's health care from Medicare, then what you're doing is through the government with Medicare is able to aggregate and buy in bulk, okay? It's called economy of scale. It means that because they're so big, they get things cheaper. So when you cut out Medicare for people or cut it or whatever you do, those same people, they still have those needs, so they have to pay for it themselves.
Yep.
It puts them on their own. They're either on their own against these giant companies, or they're not going to get the care. Either way, their own money is involved, so they're going to be out of the economy. I mean, we're talking about huge amounts of money, so they're out of the economy, and that's not going to grow the economy. It's shifting the cost away from government, and government, you know, gets a lot of its money from the wealthy taxpayers who made their money on that infrastructure that the government is, and the Wall Street, which is the government, really, in a lot of ways, makes Wall Street happen because it sets the rules. It even regulates what money is. So we're shifting those costs away from the wealthy people who pay a lot of the taxes because they benefit the most from the economy. We're shifting it away from them. It's not a cut. It's a shift, one more shift away from the wealthy, making the rich richer.
No, call it what it is. It's redistribution of wealth. It's taking from me and you and Granny and giving to the Koch brothers and the billionaire class. That is what it is. And the word austerity is something that Americans are, it's a foreign word to them. If you ask them, it's a French word, because it's the only places we ever hear the word austerity are from Latin America or from, countries that are going through what France is going through.
When you hear people say the government spends too much and they should cut, just remember, when they cut, that doesn't cut the cost out of the economy. It makes it worse.
Yep.
And it makes the very people who drive the economy, the consumers, bear the brunt of those costs much more than the rich people. Their money is going to be tucked away somewhere where it's not really necessarily helping the economy.
Yeah, they will be just fine. What's the name of the article again?
The article is Austeridiocy. And oh, by the way, I also call the people who are doing this Austeridiocy.
There you go.
Austeridiocy, budget cuts take money out of the economy.
And we've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Dave Johnson's name. It'll take you right there. Dave, great talking to you. I appreciate the time, and great article, man.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, and that's at ourfuture.org.
All righty. We got a link to that as well. We're going to take a quick break after this. Again, the piece... over at ourfuture.org, we've got a link on our site at thericksmithshow.com. And really, when you hear the word austerity, what's interesting to me, and again, as I said before, other countries, you know, they're the ones who we seem to think that they're the ones who get stuck with this. It's coming home to roost. We're back after this.
All our money and shipping it offshore to the job that you're looking for.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
GOP land is all a Twitter. Now that Texas Governor Rick Perry has announced that he's ready to ascend to the White House. His candidacy was actually launched the week before at a prayer-a-palooza he held in Houston, where he consecrated himself as the Christian candidate. Only about 30,000 evangelicals attended Perry's public prayer spectacle in a cavernous football stadium, but the presidential wannabe got saturation coverage by the media, which has gone gaga over yet another small-minded right-wing Texas governor. If the media had any real journalistic curiosity about what kind of national, quote, leader this guy would be, they could have slipped away on that same day to the city's convention center. There, a much larger crowd of 100,000 Houstonians had gathered in bleak testimony to Perry's gubernatorial leadership. They were some of Houston's many low-income children and parents struggling to make ends meet in Perry's hard-scrabble Texas economy. These needy families had come to a citywide back-to-school event where backpacks, school supplies, uniforms, haircut vouchers, immunizations, and bags of food were being provided by the school district. Officials had expected 25,000 to show up, but four times that number came. Some families had camped out for hours before the doors opened, and many were turned away as supplies were exhausted by 10 a.m. "It shows the need," said a solemn school spokesman. This is Jim Hightower saying, Perry is known in Texas as Governor Supercuts, not only for his spiffy hairdo, but also for cutting the budgets of schools and poverty programs and holding down wages. In his 10-year tenure, Perry has created more minimum wage jobs than all other states combined, and his super-rich state now has more families in poverty than any other. Can you say President Supercuts?
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
Take a guitar and
Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download our podcast from the website, or if you've got a smartphone, you can download the Stitcher app and take your class war to go. You know, here's the thing. With this whole debate the other night, you know, a whole bunch of fact-checking back and forth, and I happened to check one of the PolitiFact site in talking about Romney saying that government has grown from 27% to 30%. In fact, he said back in the days of John F. Kennedy, the federal government took up, along with the state and local governments, 27% of the economy. Today, government consumes 37% of the economy. We're inches away from no longer having a free economy. And they ruled it as mostly true because the reality is yeah, we have taken on a little bit more, as he points out. But when they went back and they looked at the numbers, they went to 1963 and they said, okay, in 1963, it was 27.7% of the GDP and, or of the budget. And they said that federal Social Security and Medicare expenditures were 2.6% of the budget. Also, federal payments to individuals exclusive of Social Security and Medicare, also 2.6. Medicare, you know, just for full disclosure, didn't exist. So they're comparing something, and this is what this is how the right loves to spin this kind of stuff. And if they saw that, they'll say, look how much Medicare has gone up since then. Medicare wasn't around then. And yeah, I mean, we do spend over 8% on Social Security and Medicare now because I would argue, we have a for-profit healthcare system now that we didn't have back in 1963. We had community-owned hospitals back then. You didn't have big, huge insurance companies taking $2, you know, 20 cents out of every dollar to pay investors. You didn't have a prescription drug bill that says, oh, we're not going to negotiate for price. We're Americans. We're exceptional. We pay full price. You didn't have that back then. And to be honest, we didn't have all of the technology we've got now. So you know what? The fact of the matter is you go through and you look at the actual spending, for the most part, I think they've done a pretty good job of bringing some of the costs down. And yes, Medicare and Social Security is growing a little bit larger. And it's going to until we get, the healthcare costs under control.
No, it's called the baby boomers, Rick. You know, the baby boomers are starting to retire. Dramatically increase the cost of those programs, but that's just the reality of it.
So, again, what they're trying to do is they're going to give you a voucher and say, hey, well, here's your voucher. If you can't afford to get health care, die.
Pretty close.
There you go. Very nice. So do you remember all this talk about there's a Democratic strategist out there, and they're going to work hard to make Romney seem weird? I mean, he is weird. I went home last night, and this is one of those, and I don't know why I do this, and I wish I would stop at some point, but I went home, and I had to turn on CNN, or I mean C-SPAN, because I go home, and I turn the C-SPAN on, and I'm like, I wish my wife would just get up and smack me and say, go to bed, but there I am, I'm watching Mitt Romney flipping chicken patties. Yeah, I gave up sleep to watch this weird guy flipping chicken patties badly.
Like he does that every night. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. And really trying to feign concern, to fake that this is something that he does. And I'm going, you never do this. But I did realize something as I was watching it. And we do put a lot of attention on these people, and we do, put them in situations that, to be honest, do I give a rat's behind whether he can flip a chicken patty on an open grill? No. I wish our presidential candidates didn't have to go through this mindless nonsense to try and show us that they're one of us. I don't want my president to be wasting his time flipping chicken patties on a grill. I want him studying foreign policy. I want him coming up with a really smart plan on how to get the economy going again. I want him to be a smart guy who doesn't flip chicken patties. But I'm watching Romney, and again, I could never do this. I could never run for president. This guy who,
Why? Because you don't like chicken?
Well, maybe on one hand, but he's standing there talking to a bunch of people, and this guy walks up with something on a stick, and it's completely unrecognizable. It could be a cow patty for all you know. And he shoves it in Romney's face. Oh, here, try this. It's really good. It's a local delicacy. And Romney looks at it, he takes a little bite out of it. And I'm going, I could never do that. Never in a million years would someone shove something in my face on a stick that looks like it could be cow turd and say, here, have it be. It's great. Never going
to
happen.
Did you notice they're going out of their way to make you think that he's just a regular guy?
Yeah.
That, you know, he barbecues his own chicken patties every night, and he goes out and he talks to his neighbors, and he's just like one of us. When you know,
I don't
he's
want one of
not.
Us. I don't want one of
but
us.
But he's not.
You know, we had one of us. We had George Bush. He's stupid like the rest of us. And look what it got us.
Well, but my point is, he's very uncomfortable in doing it. I mean, not only is it maybe not I don't know. Time will prove if it was effective, but I can tell you this, he does look very uncomfortable doing it. And there is an awkwardness about him.
Right? And the thing is, he is weird.
That's,
so
you can call what you want.
Axelrod comes out and says, you know, the first person in our administration who calls him weird, we're going to fire.
We're going to fire.
And I'm going, why? He's weird. And that's okay. I mean, it's okay to be weird, as long as he isn't a hypocrite. If we, you know, we find him coming out saying, you know, I don't know. I don't really don't know what he believes other than corporations are people.
Well, I think it's fair to say, though, when you criticize him, to say he's an elitist, and his perception of reality of life in America is really disjointed from his perception due to the fact that he's never been one of us. And I understand there's a lot of people that have never been one of us, but he really, I think they're really with this gentleman. There really is a disjointure as to reality and his perception of reality.
Well, either way, you look at all of them, and to be honest, there isn't one that stood up there. Not Snow White, none of the Seven Dwarfs, so none of them that I think are presidential material. You know, out of all of the jibber-jabbering they did last night, Gingrich said one thing I agreed with. This super committee's dumb, and I agree with that.
Yes.
Ron Paul said some smart things, of all people. You know, the war in Iraq, the what we're doing in Iran, dumb.
Did you catch the Chris Wallace thing? Chris Wallace apparently was asking some pointy questions, and finally Newt said, you know, I wish you'd stop trying to ask gotcha questions. And he was right about that. And, you know, there's some pundits that said, hey, you know, Newt came off pretty good on this. No, he doesn't. He's not going to win. I mean, he's so far behind that he's barely hanging on. But, you know, to some degree, you're exactly right. I think of all the candidates, probably made more sense on this particular night. He made more sense than any of them.
And Bachman tried to come back. I think she did the best of everyone because she was the one under attack, I think, most of the night. Pawlenty did a horrible job because I think he tried to be too forceful. He was pushing it. It's just not his personality.
And I thought he was too condescending to her. I mean, you and I both know that she's not a genius, but I think he crossed that line from pointing out some facts to really being too negative.
See, now, if I were him, where you could have gone with that whole submissive thing, is I would have, as the man standing next to her, you're a woman, be submissive.
Oh.
I mean, that is what she kind of, you know, was kind of saying.
But you know, when she was attacked, I don't think she handled herself well at all. She didn't.
She's a loudmouth. And, you know, good for her. And
well, have you heard her explanation about what they asked her? And rightfully so. You want to run. You want to be the leader of the free world. What are your accomplishments? And then she goes back to what she did when she was in Minnesota. Well, you know, that ain't going to cut it. That ain't going to cut it. We want to know, what are your plans for this nation? What are your opinions on key issues?
Although I would have
done...
And
she heads and hawses and...
I would have gone along the line of, well, what did Obama do before he was president? That's where I would have gone if I were her. Because I thought that would have been a reasonable statement to return. But I thought she did all right. I think Romney did enough to keep himself above the fray. Santorum looked like a joke. Huntsman, and I'm sorry, the whole Utah governor thing.
They're marginal.
Not working for me. Herman Cain, he was just, dressing, window dressing. I thought Newt did very well. I thought Bachman did. I think she did all right. But I think Romney did what he needed to do to keep himself above the fray.
Well, let's be honest, long term, I think she's going to have a real problem now that the governor from Texas entered in, because he's going to siphon off a lot of that right wing. You can bet on that.
Well, we'll see. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Alan Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. We're right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Together we will fight on to the end. Together we will live on forevermore.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
We are AFSCME.
We make history happen!
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
I got news for you.
Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C., our good friend Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you.
Did you have a chance to watch the debate last night with Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs?
I actually got to New York a little late to watch the whole thing, but I watched the last part of it.
Yeah, I sat today just riveted to the one trying to be crazier than the other.
Well, they are trying. I mean, what is the benefit of Pawlenty and Bachman going after each other? It's ridiculous. And what really upsets me is that they're worrying about their position rather than really worrying about the country.
Yeah. Oh, they're going after that crucial Minnesota vote.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know what I loved about the whole thing? That they didn't let Rick Santorum talk. I mean, I think he got like 3 or 4 minutes the whole 2 hours.
Well, I mean, everybody knows he's not going to be in there. He's probably going to come in last. And what's interesting is that they're trying to now say, well, we have to have 1%. But how percentorum has more than 1% is shot.
I've been saying from the beginning, he's out there for one reason. He's looking for a job. He hopefully somebody will look at him and say, oh, you might be a good, cause I think Perry and Santorum would be a good pairing, because Perry has this Catholic problem, and who better to get than Mr. Catholic himself?
Well, that's an interesting thing, except I think they're gonna have to go with a woman or minority, to be there. I mean, whether it's a Herman Cain type or even a Michelle Bachman type, I think they're gonna have to find, Palin again. The vice presidential, if she decides not to run as president,
I don't think Palin would ever. She's having too much fun.
But she's making too much money.
Exactly. And she gets to start her own magical mystery tour. I guess she's taking the bus back out with the magical mystery tour too. Is she going to release an itinerary so people will know where she's at?
No, she never releases an itinerary. I mean, it's just bizarre.
And what's even more
is not terribly friendly to the press, and she says she wants to go out to the people. I just don't understand. Except as you said earlier, maybe she's looking for a job.
Yeah, I got to think that at the end of this, the people who support her would get ticked off enough. Like the people here in Gettysburg, they waited for like 3 hours, and she never showed up. And if it were me, I'd be like, You could have told me you weren't coming, and I wouldn't have wasted these 3 hours of my life.
Exactly. Well, and then Newt Gingrich going after the moderator and saying he isn't being fair. And he was a Fox News analyst. I don't understand.
I guess he's not going to get called back to Fox anytime soon. But there was one thing that I did agree with that Newt said. And I can't believe I agree with something that he says. But I think this super Congress, this magical 12 people, this super Congress, I think this is a dumb idea. I thought it was a dumb idea to begin with. And it's even dumber the farther down the road we get with it.
Well, particularly because so many of them have signed the Grover Norquist pledge about this kind of thing. Although, you know, there have been some, such as Portman from Ohio, that said to the Columbus Dispatch that taxes were not off the table. He said that a while ago.
Yeah, but he's not going to raise taxes. He's just talking about maybe doing away with some of the loopholes and that stuff. You know, I don't think he's really talking about instituting a progressive income tax or anything to raise revenue in that vein. It's just a matter of cutting off some of the, maybe a handful of the subsidies that they'll go back and get later.
Right. It'll be interesting to see if they actually agree on anything or come up with anything.
Yeah, I'm starting to think the trigger is looking pretty good at this point.
It depends what they come up with. I mean, it's not a hopeful situation.
Not at all. And speaking of bus tours, I guess the president's going to be taking a bus tour soon? The
president's going to tours in the Midwest. They actually have announced part of the schedule, which I don't recall right now, but he's going to go to the Rust Belt states. He is going to be talking to people. That's what they're basically saying, is that the purpose is for him to really talk to people and find out what Americans think.
Well, here's what this one thinks. Stop with the free trade nonsense.
You and my friend Tom Hartman, you know, I call it NAFTA Shafta.
You know, he went to the plant in Holland, Michigan yesterday. We had a woman on who was there, and, you know, she said it was like crickets. You know, he's talking about, you know, this is a great battery plant. We're going to be able to do all this. And then he started talking free trade, and it's like crickets in the room. Nobody's buying it. Been there, done that, saw the movie. It's the same ending.
Well, that's right. I mean, it is. You don't understand why he's big on free trade. And as I think I said to you before, I was at the White House covering it the night that Clinton, I didn't get to go to the party, but they had a big party the night that he passed NAFTA. And some of us were going, what? And that's when we came up with NAFTA Shafta.
Yeah, I worry about this guy. I'm telling you, the whole the more trade agreements. A year before an election, having your convention in North Carolina ticking off labor even more, and really, I mean, thumbing your nose at them every chance you get, even though the right keeps saying, well, you know, he's paying all this homage to labor unions. I am not seeing it.
No, well, they're not seeing it either. At least the guys I talked to in Washington aren't.
But, you know, here's the thing. You know, it's either him or it's going to be maybe Rick Perry, since I'm guessing Saturday, it has been leaked, going to be the big day he's going to announce to kind of steal the thunder away from Iowa.
Well, what's so fascinating about that is, yes, he's A, trying to steal the thunder away from Iowa. But more importantly is that until a few weeks ago, the Republicans on the Hill were saying, oh, he's not going to run. He'll never be able to raise the money. Don't worry. He's not going to be there. It's going to be Romney. That's what they were saying.
Well, they were wrong, because, you know, you look at this guy, and he's told you he's the prophet, and a lot of those people who attend mega churches, like the big mega church session they had last Saturday, they're going to fund him quite heavily, I think.
I think he's going to try. He's very much going after that pot of money, but actually so is Michelle Bachmann, so we'll see who gets it.
Yeah, a friend of mine sent me an email with a flag. First rule of business for Perry when he takes office. Instead of the stars, going to put a cross in there. That's going to be the new American flag.
Oh, my gosh. Worrisome, to say the least.
Scared.
But Perry's will be interesting, and it'll be interesting to see if he can take away from Romney's money center.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I think Bachmann's going to win the straw poll. I think everybody agrees on that, right?
Well, yes. I don't think Romney's going to win it. I think Bachmann comes very, very high. And I wouldn't be surprised, actually, in some respects, if Newt Gingrich doesn't do a little better than people think.
I don't think Romney's in it, is he? I didn't think he threw his name into it.
Oh, no, he didn't buy space and all that kind of stuff. But he can still, I think you can still.
Somebody
could
write him in. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
No.
You know, most of those, I'm not going to say it.
It's a right-wing beauty contest.
There you go. Ellen Ratner, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Alan Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Now to find out what's going on across the street. What do you got for us tonight, Jake? Thank you. Convention in North Carolina, ticking off labor even more, and really, I mean, thumbing your nose at them every chance you get, even though the right keeps saying, well, you know, he's paying all this homage to labor unions. I am not seeing it.
No, well, they're not seeing it either. At least the guys I talked to in Washington aren't.
But, you know, here's the thing. You know, it's either him or it's going to be maybe Rick Perry, since I'm guessing Saturday, it has been leaked, going to be the big day he's going to announce to kind of steal the thunder away from Iowa.
Well, what's so fascinating about that is, yes, he's A, trying to steal the thunder away from Iowa, but more importantly is that until a few weeks ago, the Republicans on the Hill were saying, oh, he's not going to run. He'll never be able to raise the money. Don't worry. He's not going to be there. It's going to be Romney. That's what they were saying.
Well, they were wrong because, you know, you look at this guy and he's told you he's the prophet. And a lot of those people who attend mega churches, like the big mega church session they had last Saturday, they're going to fund him quite heavily, I think.
I think he's going to try. He's very much going after that pot of money. But actually, so is Michelle Bachmann. So we'll see who gets it.
Yeah, a friend of mine sent me an email with a flag. First rule of business for Perry when he takes office. Instead of the stars, going to put a cross in there. That's going to be the new American flag.
Oh my gosh, worrisome to say the least.
Scared.
But Perry's will be interesting. It'll be interesting to see if he can take away from Romney's money thunder.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I think Bachmann's going to win the straw poll. I think everybody agrees on that, right?
Well, yes. I don't think Romney's going to win, and I think Bachmann comes very, very high. And I wouldn't be surprised, actually, in some respects, if Newt Gingrich doesn't do a little better than people think.
I don't think Romney's in it, is he? I didn't think he threw his name into it.
Oh, no, he didn't buy space and all that kind of stuff. But he can still, I think he can still
somebody
write
could write him in. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
No.
You know, most of those, I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say it.
It's a right-wing beauty contest.
There you go. Alan Ratner, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Alan Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Now to find out what's going on across the street. What do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Yeah, thanks, Rick. A very relevant article coming out of the Patriot News concerning, you guessed it, the economic crisis that Harrisburg is facing. The Harrisburg City Council will vote on Mayor Linda Thompson's fiscal recovery plan in special legislation session at 6 p.m. on August 31st. A bill introducing a plan for a vote will get its first reading during the council's legislative session at 6 p.m. on August 23rd. Thompson was forced to develop a fiscal blueprint that addresses Harrisburg's $310 million of incendiary debt and budget deficit after the council voted down the state-sponsored Act 47. The mayor's plan calls for more financial concessions from other stakeholders, including the state, Dauphin County, and the municipal bond insurer that backed the city's incendiary debt. Brad Poplinski, Susan Brown Wilson, Eugene Smith, and Wanda Williams rejected the Act 47 plan last month. Williams indicated that she and three others who voted against the plan did not support Thompson's version. We're coming down to the last and final chapter, and this is the schedule in the next couple weeks. The public can provide written comments on the plan to Mayor Linda Thompson until August 17th. Mayor Thompson has until August 26th to make any revisions to her plan, and the city council must vote on Thompson's plan by September 6th. Again, we're coming down to the last and final chapter of this horrendous situation. There's going to be a lot of suffering. It's going to have to shared suffering till the city gets back. And again, I just hope that the city workers, who are as much victims as anybody, are not asked to bear an unfair burden in this horrendous situation that Harrisburg finds itself. Liquor stores privatization. We talked about this and and yesterday they had another meeting on it up in Harrisburg. And at this meeting, the reunion leaders and LCB officials and others who showed up with charts and graphs. It was the second of at least four hearings scheduled to take place around the state. House Majority Leader Mike Terzay, who's from Allegheny County, is sponsoring House Bill 11, which calls for auctioning off 1,250 wholesale and retail liquor stores. Many who testified Thursday said the proposal would drive up prices, limit the selection available to consumers, potentially leave many rural areas without a liquor store close by. The Terzai plan would raise taxes on the most popular and the most affordable brands, and it would reduce taxes and costs for more expensive pricer items, said Wendell Young, leader of the United Food and Commercial Workers, which represents about 3,500 clerks in state liquor stores. The bill calls for eliminating Pennsylvania's 30% markup, 18% Johnstown flood tax, and handling fees in exchange for a volume-based tax. The per-gallon tax would range from $8.25 to $12 per gallon, depending on the type of liquor and the alcohol content. Opponents say at those price levels, which are some of the highest in the nation, consumers will not pay lower prices. According to numbers provided by the union on Thursday, 32 of Pennsylvania's top-selling 50 wines would see a price increase averaging 24%, while 24 of the top-selling 50 spirits would see a price increase averaging 13%. More of the facts that are vented about this issue, Rick, the more you realize that the legislature is still up in the air, and the issue of privatization, the advocates have not really made their case. When you vent and you look at the particulars, the Republican plan, I'm afraid, is going to cost, depending on what you buy, is going to cost you considerably more. Disturbing report coming out of Washington, Rick, Postal Service. Apparently, there are some in the federal government that would like to make draconian cuts. There are some in Congress that are seeking to cut about 120,000 postal worker jobs. They are talking about breaking a union contract that was signed earlier this year and withdrawing from the health and retirement plans. According to the president of the APWU, Congress created this mess and Congress can fix it. The USPS economic crisis is a result of a provision of the Postal Accountability Enhancement Act of 2006 that requires the Postal Service to pre-fund the health care benefits of future retirees, a burden to no other government agency or any private company bears. The legislation requires the USPS to fund a 75-year liability over a 10-year period, and that requirement costs the USPS more than $5.5 billion per year. Without this burden, actually, the Postal Service would be in sound financial shape. In the end, I think this is just another effort to ultimately privatize these jobs, and that is a shame because I think the Postal Service on in the big picture, does an excellent job, and to be saddled with this unfair burden that no other government agency has, it's just a shame to eliminate these jobs. And again, it's just another effort of the Republicans to privatize. Back to you, Rick.
All righty, let's take a quick break. We're right back to wrap this up and head into the weekend. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
The 19th century saw regular work weeks of 70 hours or more. Many attempts were made to get legislatures across the country to pass maximum hour laws limiting the number of hours an employee could be compelled to labor. The first union victory in capping work hours was won by the building trades in 1840. They won a 60-hour week. In 1874, the state of Massachusetts became the first to pass a law mandating a maximum hours for women. Other states followed as union activists around the country fought to pass laws to protect workers. Their work stalled in 1905 when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled the New York Bake Shop Act unconstitutional, citing a sacred bond between master and employee and the liberty of contract. With this decision, the Lochner era, named after bakery owner Joseph Lochner, who had been cited, tried, and convicted of working employees beyond the 60-hour limit, began. This single decision opened the floodgates, allowing attacks on child labor laws, minimum wage laws, as well as maximum hour laws by corporate and anti-union interests. Only after President Franklin Delano Roosevelt bill threatened to enlarge the United States Supreme Court from 9 to 13, did the court do an about-face with regard to liberty of contract and what has been called a switch in time to save 9, ruling in West Coast Hotel versus Parrish that Elsie Parrish was indeed entitled to the state of Washington's minimum wage, regardless of what conditions she agreed to, marking the end of the Lochner era. FDR's New Deal policies helped workers reclaim lost ground in their fight for the American dream. The proposal and passage of the Fair Labor Standards Act, federally restricting weekly hours, mandating overtime pay, setting a minimum wage, and restricting the exploitative use of child labor was an essential step forward for workers, families, and communities. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickschmithshow.com.
But whatever it is, I hope he doesn't do it again. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Also, if you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast right there. Or if you've got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app and take your class war on the go. Again, I have no idea. Make some pizza. I wonder if, he was the CEO of Godfather Pizza. I wonder if he actually made a pizza. We really should look into that. And, if you wanted to really win over the folks there in Iowa, you should have brought free pizza for everyone, because who doesn't love pizza? That's what I loved about Wisconsin. There's pizza everywhere. So here's the thing. I was talking earlier about the Senate, and it looks like I think the Democrats are probably going to lose the Senate. But, it's a 23 Democrats trying to save their seats, 10 Republicans. And only one Republican I see might have trouble, that's Scott Brown. And it looks maybe, possibly, that Elizabeth Warren may throw her hat into the ring after she got booted away for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And I don't know that I would be against that. Maybe she would work.
Well, she certainly, I'm sure, is going to be a better candidate. You brought up that race. If you remember, that was the first big national race, and the Republicans were chomping at the bit to get that get off the political floor after Obama steamrolled them in the 08 election. And he had the benefit of a lot of money coming in from all over the country. He had activists flying into Massachusetts, and they were energized. And on top of that, in a very heavily Democratic state, the Democrat who ran, who, by the way, if I remember, held a statewide office, she was very popular in that office, but she ran poor election. And Scott Brown ran a smart election and just, beat her by impressive margin. But that was I think it's a fair thing to say the Democrat actually lost it. Although
she sat around waiting to be appointed, drumming her fingers.
She took a vacation 3 weeks out. Now, who does that?
John Kerry.
In a tough election. 3 weeks out, she's down in Florida.
Must be a Massachusetts thing.
And if you remember, Scott Brown was out. The Philadelphia Flyers paid the Boston Bruins at the baseball stadium. Thousands and thousands of blue-collar workers who the Democrats need for votes, and she made the statement, well, why would I want to go to the hockey game? Well, maybe it's because the Republicans were out there handing out the literature and getting your votes that you should have had. That's how bad her campaign was.
Yes.
Scott Brown was smart and kicked her butt pretty bad.
She ran a pretty horrible campaign. And hopefully that Elizabeth Warren will throw her hat in the ring, and maybe she'll actually work. Smart woman, though, and I wish they would have put her on the Consumer Financial Protection Board. I think she was the best person for it. But again, the ideological right, they want nobody. They don't want that. They're going to do everything they can do to destroy it. That is their MO, though. I don't know if you saw this story. Remember, not too long ago, we were talking about in Little Rock, Arkansas, how this atheist group wanted to, put a couple of bus ads a couple of ads on the local buses. And originally they said, yeah, okay. And then they, you know, then they came out and said, well, you know, we need to have a $36,000 deposit to run the ads. All they wanted to do was run $5,000 worth of ads. So the bus company says, well, you know, you're going to have to have a $36,000 deposit. Then they changed their mind and said, no, not $36,000 deposit. You're going to need to have a $3 million insurance policy. Well, you know, they got all upset, and, you know, they filed a lawsuit. And you got to love the rationale. The bus company, and I guess what does this say about Christians? The bus company said, you know, you're going to put these atheist signs on the sides of the bus that say, are you good without God? Millions are. The bus company said, look, we need to have this $3 million insurance policy because angry Christians will vandalize our buses.
All in the name of the Lord, though, Rick.
they sued, and they have won. And they said, look, you know, the federal judge ruled that they did, in fact, violate their free speech. And you go, what, but that's the bus company. Yes, it is a public entity taking public money. If this were a private industry, which is why the right wants to privatize everything, then there wouldn't be an argument. But this thing takes government money, so it has to toe that line. And I have this conversation with several people I get these bizarre emails all the time of people who think that their religion and their country, theirs, not ours, theirs, is under attack. And it's being stolen by others. And again, I go back to this whole religious thing. Government is out of that. They're not interfering in your right to. And I told my aunt today, who sent me this email, I'm a Pastafarian. I want to have my driver's license picture taken with a strainer on my head. You know, if the Muslims can have the little do rag thing across their face, I want the strainer.
A Pastafarian?
Yeah, you know the Pastafarian.
You mean Rastafarian?
No, Pastafarian.
Oh.
We worship the ramen noodle.
I missed that one.
Yeah, well, I don't doubt it. But, you know, the reality is you know, everybody has their little place, and government doesn't decide. And, you know, when you see things like this, you go, duh. So you ticked away a whole bunch of money for no reason. They won, so we'll move on. And, you know, finally, a story that I'm sure you'll love, Jake. In the great state of Wisconsin, they have the Guinness Book of World Records, who came out and certified the world's largest ever produced, 38 inches wide, 7.5 inches high, 125.6 pound cream puff.
Cream puff?
There you go. 125.6 pound cream puff. It is the world's biggest cream puff ever certified. It will go in the Guinness Book of World Records. It was the team cream puff was led by Dave Puff Daddy Schmidt, who created the huge dessert, only taking about 6.5 hours in an oversized oven. So there you go.
And how do you serve that?
I'm sure you would figure out a way. Or you would just dive right in face first.
How do you cut that without, you know, poofing, allowing all the good stuff inside to just, you know what I mean?
I'm sure, Jake, that you would figure out a way. And I'm sure all within a day, the whole 125.6 pounds
that's enough dessert for a year
of the cream puff would be taken care of, Mr. Gallon of ice cream.
There we go.
Anyway, I'm taking the weekend and I'm going to Cleveland to visit family, going to catch an Indians game, say hello to my grandmother. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. We've had a great week here. And, of course, if you missed any of the programs, we've got them all archived at thericksmithshow.com. If you got a question, comment, something on your mind, something you want to tell me, cuss me out, whatever, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Hope you have a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday as we pick up the No Rights at Work agenda attack that's coming here to the state of Pennsylvania. I'm telling you, folks, now is the time that we stand up, fight back, and organize. We'll see you. Have a great weekend. See you Monday.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickssmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the Buddha sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming to the USA.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.